Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard? Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, everybody.
What?
Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes. It's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can...
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
I gotta be a man.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to this all-American episode of the Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and along with me for the ride, as always, is my PIC from Norwalk CT, and that's Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing today?
Good evening, Mr. Rosero. It is actually very special and emotional and exciting.
You crying already?
Number 26.
Sounds like you're crying already.
I am. I'm in tears. I'm okay. Always in tears when I'm on the air with you.
All right. Well, yeah. We made a vow when we started this, and we had our boy Derek make 8,000 different opens for us, so we would not use the same one twice, but we figured this particular one needed to be used twice, because obviously it was very fitting for tonight for multiple reasons. Mm-hmm. Of course, this song was famously used by Barack Obama Saturday night for the White House Correspondents' Dinner. They made a special music video for his entrance and played the song as he came in. And it was very fitting, because as of last night, Osama bin Laden is dead. He was shot in the chest, shot in the head, and now he's gone. And I think the world's a bit of a better place today. Do you agree?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I'm glad that the scumbag bastard is being eaten by God knows when in the bottom of the sea or wherever the hell his body's going to rot. But it is an amazing day today to be an American. You know, regardless of the fact that we've had a lot of successes since that disgusting Tuesday morning 10 years ago, even from a symbolic point of view, the fact that we know that he's no longer breathing the same air we are is comforting, to say the least.
All right, now, we don't want to get into too much politics here. This isn't something we aim to do, and we're not even going to get into a lot of the jingoistic stuff. I don't think we should stay away from that as well, because a lot of people aren't into that. So what we want to do is just kind of give a quick recap. Mm-hmm. What happened, and actually kind of wanted to talk about my experience with how everything unfolded, because I was actually watching the pay-per-view at a bar and was on Twitter at the same time, and I kind of caught everything at the early wave of it. So let's kind of give the facts, and then we'll kind of get into that story of how everything came about. I guess we don't really need... You know what? I think everyone actually knows the story by now, so maybe we don't need to get into the whole facts.
Well, I mean, we know that apparently there were a couple of tidbits out today that a courier was delivering something to him in this compound that was in Pakistan, and the Navy SEALs and apparently the drone kind of followed this courier. So whoever this courier is, we should probably, you know, make him a citizen. And
well, they've been following
him
for like 4 years, I think.
Yeah, well, he was dumb enough to actually go to this compound. So it's clear that after 3.5 years, Al Qaeda was dumb enough to keep using this guy and not realizing that you know that he was being pegged. So that was pretty much how that was laid out, and then the SEALs just went in and cleaned him out. So that's pretty much what it came down to.
Yeah, and I was kind of glad, too, that, I mean, it was safer anyway, because this way they didn't take out any civilians by not using bombs, you know, by going in there on foot.
Yes.
And also it was good because he suffered a little bit, because he was up on the third floor, so he basically had to wait up there while the SEALs went through the house floor by floor, wiping everyone out and getting to him. So I think that was good too. It wasn't like it was an immediate bomb. He didn't know it was coming. At least he knew that he was friggin' done at this point. And then, you know, there's actually a dispute right now with the rumor all day was that he used one of his wives as a human shield to take bullets for him. I don't know if that was true right now. Well, there's a report saying that wasn't true. So,
no, that and his kids, I guess. I mean, there was kid that he would run one of his kids out into the hallway to, you know, to deflect the SEALs to shoot so he can run another direction. I mean, it's just, why am I not surprised, to be honest with you? It wouldn't surprise me that it's true, but
and definitely those SEALs are pretty ballsy, man. To accept that mission to go in, really unknown. You know, they knew they had a good idea that he was in there, but they didn't know for sure. They didn't know what was awaiting them really in there, and to go in and knowing this may be the best shot ever that they would have at taking this guy out, and if they blew it, you know, who knows what's going to happen. You know, pretty ballsy by them. So, you know, there's a lot out there about whether they think Al-Qaeda is going to be crippled by this or whether they think they'll be stronger. I think in the short term, it's going to be a little dangerous because they may, you know, be looking for revenge. But I think long term, it sounds like they really relied on him for a lot of recruiting and getting the message out. And do you think the fact that he was like living in a mansion, you know, not out there fighting or not out hiding out in the woods and kind of chicken shit way to die, to be honest with you. Do you think that affects the recruiting of Al-Qaeda? If they're like, you know, this guy's selling us the speech and getting us to go out there and give our lives up for terrorism, and he's, you know, living in this multi-million dollar mansion in Pakistan for the last 4 years, you know, probably living kind of the good life, you know, he couldn't come out, but he's hiding in there. Do you think this affects them at all as far as, you know, wanting to go forward with these kind of missions?
Well, I can't pretend to be an extremist. I'm not going to pretend even how he somehow mangles the Muslim religion to suit his fancy. You know, obviously, you go country by country. Gaddafi lives in a palace. Fucking Saddam and his 90,000 kids lived in posh living while the whole country lived in their own filth.
He was a dictator, though. He was the president of that country. This isn't a president. I mean, this is a guy that they believe in and follow. Because of the message, you know that he,
right?
Yeah, he's more like a cult leader, Bin Laden, than Saddam Hussein.
No, I agree. I mean, my point is that they all kind of, I'm sure they all were, you know, pals. But my point is that I don't know if they're blinded enough to understand that, or whether or not they're like, you know what, screw this guy. You know, maybe there was something. I mean, again, I can't pretend to be in Al Qaeda. I don't know if there was some insurgence from within that he had people starting to kind of usurp Bin Laden's authority, and maybe we're starting to send Al Qaeda in a different direction. My concern, my worry is that he is now going to be a martyr, and now they're going to be more angry and ready to do anything, even if it's not planned well. Some guy driving through, you know, Midtown with a bomb in his car and just blows it up in the middle of an intersection. I mean, who knows?
Well, that's more the thing to worry about is the little attacks. I think they've got a grip on some of the major stuff to be prevented. But, you know, I think that's a big part of why they went. I think they wanted to honor the Islam religion anyway, because they did not want to piss off a major sect of people that don't support Obama. Listen, I'm doing it now. Osama bin Laden.
I didn't even do it.
I know. But they... you know, if he was buried somewhere, or they kind of made a tomb for him or anything like that, you know, that kind of opens it up to other attacks as well. So I think it was kind of smart on two prongs. One, you don't piss off the Islamic people by giving them the proper burial that they require. And secondly, don't give them a place to come either worship or attack.
No. So, I mean, if I had my personal opinion, you know, there is a little rumors out there that he wasn't dumped at sea, that his body is actually still somewhere else. But regardless, my opinion is I would rather just take his body, hang it on a noose over the Ground Zero pit, which is now has the lights, and just have people throw rocks at it. That's what I have. All the family members of those 4,000 people plus line up and just beat him with a bat or something. I think symbolically it's just closure. Now, I mean, obviously you can't get back your husband, your wife, your uncle, your brother, your girlfriend, whatever. They're gone. It's unfortunate. And maybe this little moment of him gone now, makes you feel a little bit better, maybe, but just the fact that he's dead is good enough for me. And you know, we will move on as our country, as a country now. And you saw it on Raw tonight. Vince doesn't forget, and he remembers 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, let's get to that one second, because I did want to talk about, I know some people are kind of groaning at the fact that they're making this like an all-American Raw, but I wanted to kind of take two takes on that, but
sure. Well, we'll get to that in a minute, but my point is I'm just happy the guy's dead, and I love that. And you know what, I was a journalist for 13 years, both in print and in radio, and you know, and I remember being on the air that day, that Tuesday afternoon, and almost getting thrown off the air by my boss because I actually sounded angry, and my job was to calm down, not rile up.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at the front of the New York Post today, it said got him underneath Vengeance is ours, U.S. kills the bastard. And so, you know, you take a little creative license, but honestly, who's gonna argue it? So
no, I mean, you know, you see some of the, I've seen some things pop up on random sites of idiots on Facebook kind of getting all up in arms about, you know, oh, yeah. I saw one person actually was saying he has kids. We should respect that. He has a family. I mean, come on. This, you know, there's very few people in this world that you can take out like they did.
Yeah.
That I don't think we need to feel sorry
he
for.
He didn't even care about his own goddamn family. Why the hell should any of us see his wife out in the middle of bullets, for God's sakes?
I think it is kind of, I don't want to say ironic, coincidental, I guess, that May 1st was actually the same date that Hitler was found dead as well. So it's little bit of synergy there. And
now they can all meet now and they can meet in the same room because that's probably where they all are. And it's probably very warm.
You know, just going back quickly to your martyr idea. I think it's almost a good thing that it took 10 years to kill him, because I think if it happened like 1 or 2 years after or immediately after 9/11, they would have held him as more of a martyr at that point. I think now that 10 years have gone by and he really hasn't had another major strike, you know, I think that kind of helped maybe quell some of that a little bit.
Right.
I think there are still some people that will hold him up as a martyr, but not as much as if it came on the heels of like what he did.
Well, I know that we do know that at least over the last, you know, 10 years, we have beaten Al-Qaeda down considerably. And, you know, they're not as strong as they were that day or even, you know, that first year. But, you know, our military has done a hell of a job of just beating them down and beating them down and beating them down. And now he's gone. So really, this is a perfect time to look at them and realize they might be a very weakened group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they and let me tell you something. However, the way we get the information is irrelevant to our conversation, but they'll all roll on each other like cheap suits when it comes to brass tacks. So when it comes down to it, I think right now we can all feel good that the war on terror has taken a huge turn for the better. There is still a little work to do, but we're not going to talk about that here. But it's just nice to see the figurehead of evil. And that's essentially what he is. Like you said, he was, you know, we, you know, our grandparents and our parents, you know, my dad was 7 when the Japanese.
Yeah, I was going to say, he must have been Civil War, because if you were around for World War I.
Well, you know, Paul Revere ran by my house. So, no. Just kidding. But, you know, my dad was 7 when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. And it's amazing that my dad was alive to see two of the most cowardly blind sightings in American history. And, you know, so when our grandparents saw the face of evil, and it was Hitler, and it was Mussolini, and it was Yamamoto, and now here we are, our face of evil is now gone. And, you know, it feels good.
And actually, some of the stuff that I find the most interesting, and I don't want to get into it here because we could have a whole other podcast on it, and that's actually some of the Nostradamus, like, prediction stuff. I find that stuff to be really interesting. I was reading some of it today about, you know, wondering if Bin Laden's the third Antichrist, the first being Napoleon, the second being Hitler, and now Bin Laden. So it's a lot of interesting stuff. Anyone's into that kind of stuff, check it out. Maybe we'll talk off air about it on the Facebook page, or maybe we'll do an episode about Nostradamus. I always find that stuff to be pretty interesting. Also, what I find to be interesting is some of the ridiculously funny Photoshops I've seen regarding this.
The one Photoshop I saw the only one I saw that was funny, there was a Photoshop of the Statue of Liberty, and instead of the torch on her right hand was his head with blood dripping off it. And it said game over. So I thought that was pretty. That's the only one I really saw.
I just put one up on, it was on our board, but I put it up on our Facebook page just now. It's got Prince William and Kate kissing at their wedding. And it's got a superimposed picture of Obama smiling with sunglasses on. And like kind of behind them. And the caption says, "You have a wedding? Oh, I got a funeral." Which is pretty funny.
Oh, jeez.
And then there's another one with him pointing. He's got shades on, smirking, and it says, "Sorry it took so long to get a copy of my birth certificate. I was too busy killing Osama bin Laden." I like that one as well. So some pretty funny ones floating out there.
The birth certificate thing was very funny, and it was an interesting 24 hours of emotion for him between that on Saturday night, which I thought was very funny. I thought it was funny, and he had the little birth certificate dancing, and that was pretty good. And 24 hours later, you know, to hear that sobering news. And one thing that he did, and I want to say this, but we don't have to belabor it, but I thought it was a good thing. He actually called before he went on the air with his announcement, which I don't remember what exact time it was. It was sometime
after 10 past 11 or so.
Yeah, it was like 10 past. Apparently, they were waiting for two things. He was waiting for the information to be clear, but he wanted to call President Clinton and President Bush and tell them personally. So yeah. I thought that was very classy.
And Bush did obviously a ton of work. Clinton kind of botched this whole thing from the start because he had a chance. And they were giving Obama a lot of credit for having the balls to pull the trigger on this, because I guess that is what happened with Clinton at the time, where they had this similar kind of intelligence and he didn't want to do it because he wasn't positive, so he didn't pull the trigger. But
right.
Obama made the ballsy call.
Yes, he did.
And I must say, I think Bush deserves a lot of credit for getting things started, but I mean, isn't it more fitting to see badass Barack Obama up there basically telling, we fucking fucked you up, Bin Laden? This comes across as a badass to me.
Well,
I think that's cool.
I agree, and I also am happy that, a lot of people probably didn't want him to go this far, particularly those that voted for him. I think it's funny that the part of his character, the part of his resume that was probably very weak going into his presidency ended up being right now the one thing that has he's actually very well. So,
and I really think that he is going to the only way he's going to lose this next election is if he really, really screws something up in the next 2 years or a year and a half. If the economy goes back in the tank or something major to the major attack, something along those lines. But if things stay fairly as is right now, I think this pretty much cinches things. And like I said, we're not getting into too much politics, but I actually think the Republicans should just go with a guy like Trump just to try and catch lightning in a bottle.
I'd vote for him. I think it'd be hilarious, but who knows? I mean,
I just don't think they should waste a good candidate on this election knowing that odds are they're going to lose. So maybe, try and catch that, TMZ watching reality show loving population on Trump. But I can't see how Obama loses this next election.
Well, it's happened
plenty of time before that.
It's happened the last 3 years with midterms. I mean, the Republicans threw Bob Dole in 96 and he wasn't going to win. The Democrats threw Kerry out in 2004 and he wasn't going to win.
Yeah, I mean,
so
especially,
I think it's the same thing.
And especially coming off of this, I mean, this is just a major thing for him, an accomplishment for him. And a lot of people are not wanting to credit him, which is fine. I mean, he didn't do it. But I think he deserves some credit because it's not like he was ignorant of what was going on. It's not like it was just a random attack and they happened to kill him. I mean, he was involved in all the planning for the last 8 months and he made the final decision. So I think he does deserve some credit. But obviously, the majority of the credit goes to the ballsy servicemen over there.
Yes, Petraeus as well. I mean, I think he did a good job of knowing that the lay of the land, and it was great for Obama to trust him after the whole McChrystal mess. But we're not going to get into that whole mess. But my point is I'm just very happy that he did take the ball and run with it. I think a lot of people, again, particularly those who voted for him, were kind of hoping he would squirm away and not get into this. But I'm actually glad he went against. His popular thinking. And did what not a lot of people wanted him to do.
And I think he won over a lot of, other, especially like military or ex-military, war veterans. And I know a good friend of mine who spent time overseas. I talked to him tonight and he was pretty ecstatic about the whole thing. So, because he was over there right after 9/11, he was like over there 2002, 2003. So yes. He saw a lot of the early groundwork for this. And he sounded pretty happy that his wife woke him up around 11 to tell him what happened. And he said he was like wired from then on. So,
I know exactly who you're talking about, and I talk when I come up to my summer home and winter home, I guess. I talk with him extensively about it anytime I get a chance to see him, so I know how he's feeling, and I'm happy for him because he was one of the many that laid the groundwork in the beginning, and he should feel he should be proud because his foundation, his help of the foundation, laid the groundwork for the end result. So, like him and many others, he should be very proud. Very happy.
So, before we talk more about things that we fully are not educated on, let's move on.
And we don't want to start throwing pissing matches at people throwing things after our podcast.
Yeah. So, take everything what we said how you want it. We're not looking to incite any political flame wars right there. We're just kind of giving our immediate, honest take on the situation. That's it. So now we're going to move on because I wanted to just kind of quickly talk about the social media aspect of all this.
Yes, go ahead.
We were at our local bar watching Extreme Rules, and I happened to check Twitter, and this was around like 10:15. And they've said President Obama is making a special announcement at 10:30, top secret. Or not top secret, secretive. No one knows what it is. So immediately, you see the feed start going and we're talking. And it's like, what the hell could this possibly be at 10:30 on a Sunday night and it's a secret? Then word came out that it had to do with national security. So that's when I texted you and you said, it must be something with Libya or something like that. But I knew it had to be something fairly big to come out at that point, and you were hoping it was something good, obviously. And then, amazingly enough, of all the people in the world, the first person that I saw on my Twitter feed, and I follow a ton of random people, that had any idea of what was going on was The Rock. Now, I don't know how this fucking guy knew, but he knows somebody, because it was a good 10 minutes before I saw it anywhere else. He said, I just found out what the announcement is, and I'm proud to be an American. Great day. Or so, you know, something along those lines. And I'm like, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, it's got to be Bin Laden.
Yeah.
So then word slowly started to seep out, you know, and then we flipped over the overhead TV, still the pay-per-view on, but the little TV at our table, we flipped over to CNN to watch. You know, they're still kind of playing it close to the vest, but, you know, Twitter is just amazingly just ahead of everything. You know, word is spreading like wildfire, piecing it together, rumors are slipping out, and just to watch how that works, like one guy to the next guy to the next guy, just piecing things together and how it was all pretty much ended up becoming true once it got, you know, up on the network. And I just think Twitter and Facebook and those things are a lot bigger part of our future than a lot of people are willing to admit at this point. I think network news and network TV is lagging behind. I think social media, just the way you can instantly get information, instantly share ideas and talk things out, is just more of the future. And I actually had a little debate with our buddy Chris on our Facebook page, because we were also talking about Extreme Rules, and we started going back and forth a little bit with that, and I am. You know, and him saying that the networks have to be more careful because more people are watching, and I agree with that. But I still think that if network TV and network news like CNN, if they don't be careful, I think they're going to become quickly as antiquated as newspapers are. And actually, I'm curious to talk to our friend Leanne on this when we have her on for The Office, because she was big on this topic as well on Facebook when we were talking about it. So, you know, I'm just kind of curious to see if more people... I know TV news isn't going to go away anytime soon. I'm just saying, I think Twitter is the next... That style of reporting is the next wave, where you can kind of get those quick snippets of information out and watch things evolve with other people around the country, instead of just waiting to be told by, you know, Anderson Cooper or whoever else, and only giving what they give you, instead of being able to kind of talk it out and figure things out on your own.
Yeah. Coming from someone who was in the news, first of all, let me talk about how I felt on the other side. I was, like I said, Justin texted me. I was at my friend's house that I go to most of the time for pay-per-views. And the funny thing is they all have iPhones. They're all AT&T customers. And I have a Verizon phone. And I can never, never get any service in that house. Everybody else is bopping along with their iPhones. And our friend Mike had an iPad. And everybody's cranking away. I can't get jack with my phone in that house. So I get texts. But when I want to look up something on the internet, I can't. And like I said, Justin texted me. It was about 25 after 10 you text me. And you said Obama's got a major, major announcement at some point in the next, I think you said at 10:30.
Yeah, because it was 10:30 originally, and they kept pushing it back.
Right. And I didn't say anything to our friends in the room because I didn't think they gave a crap, to be honest with you. So I went on Verizon, and I went on to Ping, and I was looking for stories. And I went on to Google, and then I went to both Fox News, and I went to NBC. And I didn't see anything. And when I mentioned Libya to you, because there was a headline about some embassies got bombed today in Libya. So I thought something happened. Somebody got killed. Something drastic happened. That's why I said that to you. I said, oh, maybe something, you know, maybe we're doing some type of strike, something of that nature. And then when you said, oh, Obama, Bin Laden, I just did it too. Bin Laden is dead. I said, well, I think everybody likes to throw that rumor out to make themselves feel good. So I don't know if that was totally true or not. Then about 10:45, our friend Mike said, "Guys, we might need to switch from the main event to something. Apparently, Obama's having a big announcement, and they think Bin Laden is dead." And I said, and then I said to everybody, "Well, you know, my friend Justin is, you know, just well, I said my friend, they know who you are. Justin's been texting me about it. I just didn't think you guys cared." So I kind of look like a jerk, but you know what? Whatever. I know how those guys think. You know who I'm. You know who I
yeah,
who I'm
yeah.
with. So you know how I'm thinking. So we went to Fox, and we put on Fox, and Geraldo was on, and he was like fumbling, and
I heard he was awful. I didn't see any Geraldo stuff. He was like throwing out fucking rumors and all this other stuff.
Oh, but he was also like, he had him sitting there in his underwear. I mean, he was just a mess. I mean, he's like, we got to get to this guy. What's going on?
He could have been worse than Drunken John King on CNN. That dude was slurring his word. He must have just been on a bender, and then they called him. They're like, "Dude, we need you to get to the freaking White House," because he was slurring and halted speech, and he was a disaster. Oh, you know, it was actually kind of funny watching all those people celebrate at the White House, and I was actually just outside there about 2 weeks ago in that same spot, and it was just kind of like surreal to see that, you know, same picture and all those people out there dancing and jumping around.
Right. No, it was funny. So we were watching, and then we turned off. Geraldo because he's just a complete mess. So we put on we went to see if the networks had switched yet, the regular networks.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to see if the Celebrity Apprentice was knocked off.
Well, that's the funny part now. It's sidetracked right there because all the funny conspiracy theorists out there saying that Obama purposely waited till the very last 10 minutes of Celebrity Apprentice before finally going on air just to fuck with Trump.
Oh, God. And actually, you know what? It did hook because our friend Matt Rotella was furious last night. He goes, I can't believe Obama cut off. I wanted to see that housewife from Atlanta get thrown off, get fired. I'm like, you're such an idiot. But we love you, Matt, but you are an idiot. So we went to NBC, and David Gregory, who also likes to be drunk on the air, was on, and they were talking. And then after a while, I went home. It was like 10 after 11 at that point. And I'm like, you know what? I'll just watch this at home. So I went home, and nothing was happening yet. So I actually put on a movie, and then I would put on Obama. I'm sure his speech would be on later on in the night. So I watched a movie, and I put it back on about 1:45, and they were and I was watching the rallies at Times Square. I knew Times Square was going to fill up. That was a given. And then I was enjoying the moment. I was reveling in it by myself, sitting in the chair that I'm sitting in right now. And then I went to bed feeling happy. So, as for your social media comment, I agree with you. Like I said, being a news guy for 13 years, both in print and on radio, I've never been on TV news, but I was in radio and in print. Network news is very antiquated. There's no doubt about it. CBS, NBC, and ABC's 6:30 evening news blocks are plummeting. I do think that the internet and social media, Twitter's problem, not the problem, but the one thing Twitter, if Twitter wants to really be taken seriously like that, and I agree with you, I think it's a tremendous way of getting information, is they need to be taken a little more seriously. I think they need to, you don't want to, you know, you can't combine news feeds with, you know, people like
Paris.
Yeah,
but they don't, it's not meant to be taken seriously. Twitter's not trying to be a news thing. I'm just saying to use it that way is kind of the future because you can get that quick dissemination of information. Like I didn't, you know, network news, NBC, they didn't break away until almost 10:50, you know, 10:55 at the end of those shows.
Right.
I was in on everything from 10:15. You know what I mean? And CNN was there, but they were just saying the same crap over and over. They weren't even, you know, they were like hinting at it and not wanting to say it. And it's like, you know, people want to talk about it. They want to know. They want to talk about rumors. They want to try and dissect the information. And that's why I think something like that just gives you that instant forum.
Right.
You know, to read what other people are thinking, other newscasters, other journalists, celebrities, friends, you know what I mean? Just to have that ability. And I just think that is where stuff like this is headed. I think just like the internet killed newspapers, I think this is heading that way eventually. Like I said, it's going to be a long time and maybe TV news. And, you know, I think the TV, the network news stations are ahead of the times with stuff like that. But
right. The
you know, main networks, NBC, ABC, CBS, like you said, are very slowly dying off because I don't want to wait till it's like ESPN had to do with SportsCenter. They had to put it on all day and they have to have ESPN news because I don't want to wait till 6:30 to see highlights. You know,
exactly.
I don't want to wake up the next morning and wait for the newspaper to read the box score. I want to see it now. So to me, it's the same thing. I don't want to wait till 6 o'clock to get the news on what's going on. So
I think that's a big problem with it. I think a great idea, and maybe this is something that, you know, you or I or some of our other more socially networked and, schooled in this, field, maybe some news outlets will start their own Twitter-ish kind of thing, like a Fox feed or a CNN feed or something like that.
Well, they do. Like CNN, I mean, they have a Twitter account.
Right. My point is again, Twitter doesn't want to be taken seriously. If you want to have Twitter as your funny, goofy, fake Jim Duggan thing, that's awesome. But maybe if these cable networks, whether it's Fox or CNN or NBC, ABC, if they want to not be antiquated and not fall behind, create their own form of Twitter-ish kind of news feed where you can have more than one going. Instead of using Twitter for everything, they would be a good way to corner the market and create their own type of news feed. And instead of like, oh, check me out at John King, you know, nobody wants to do that. You should have your own. CNN should have their own kind of feed.
Well, they have a live blog that's actually pretty good that I just left up all day and every however long it automatically refreshes and they have little news snippets of everything that's been going on. So that, to me, that was pretty cool. That was useful. I didn't have to keep refreshing and going to different pages and looking around.
Right.
So I do want to wrap that up here though, because I think that's a topic for a whole nother episode. I actually think that'd be a really cool podcast have Leanne on.
Yes.
Because she's really up on a lot of the social media and reporting kind of stuff. So I think we should definitely do a whole show on this with her.
Yeah. And it's a great topic to talk about, and not just from a news perspective, sports, entertainment. It can be used. You can really, Twitter is just the beginning, but Twitter is such an amalgamation of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Genres can use a Twitter type, platform to really expand their information and expand their fan base, and use it to make money. I mean, Twitter can tweet commercials, tweet links to sites, things like that. I mean, I'm sure people do.
I was gonna say that already.
But specifically, specific things, and it could really. I'm looking forward to having Leanne on again, because I think that's a good way. Cooking, mm-hmm. All sorts of topics, not just have to necessarily be news, but to distance yourself from Twitter, because Twitter obviously is the place to be, but. Well, except for here, but you like that. But I mean, Twitter again. It's just Twitter's such an amalgamation. You got to pick and choose and find guys, and it just gets so cluttered. Maybe there's a lot of platforms that can do it individually, but mm-hmm. I can't wait to have Leanne on, because I'm fascinated once we get into that kind of realm, because Facebook has done it, and places like that I think have really stepped to the fore of getting instant information, and I think the cable networks are safe. I think Fox is safe. I think CNN is safe.
They're lucky, because they have the built-in 24-hour mechanism.
So, exactly.
As annoying as they can get with their constant updates and everything is breaking and everything is this, they have that ability to immediately go to that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Whereas the networks have other commitments. But why I think that part of it's antiquated. But let's move on now, because I want to get into what we referenced, and that's a pay-per-view. Before we do that, let's quickly give an update to our nation about our huge beer pong tournament past weekend.
So this was a big podcast anyway. And you know what? Fuck you, Osama bin Laden. You even ruined our chance to headline our own podcast. But at least you're fucking dead, and it's not something else. But
well, originally, now we were going to do our SummerSlam '88 show tonight, but coming off our beer pong tournament experience and the major news last night, we felt that we needed to do headlines. So we will be doing SummerSlam later this week for you guys.
Yep.
So this beer pong tournament now ended up being 13 teams. It was in this house in a basement. They had a DJ, a bar, a huge beer pong, double beer pong table. It was a pretty incredible experience. As we discussed on previous shows, you had to have a gimmick and costumes. We went as the Mega Powers, and actually I have some pictures up on my Facebook page, but I'll put them on the, I got to put them on the Place to Be Facebook as well, of us dressed up. So, I thought our costumes were pretty sweet.
Yes,
we get some good feedback on that. So we headed into this thing as the new guys. Everyone else had been there before. The setup was you play four qualifying matches, and that determines your seeding. The number one seed coming out of the qualifiers would get a double bye, and then the next two would get a single bye in the tournament. So we start off, we defeated the defending three-time champions in a qualifying match. So we were 1-0. You were a little tense. I'm not going to lie to the fans here. You were a little tense.
I was. Admittedly, I was. I was, because we've spent a lot of time playing beer pong in social atmospheres, and I consider myself a pretty good player, as do you. But when you're playing in your backyard, when you're already bombed and goofing around and walking away from the table and eating and all this other stuff, but when you're walking in an atmosphere where this is what it's all about and there's actually cash on the line, I have to admit, the first game, I'll be honest with you, I don't think I was buzzed enough.
No,
the goal, like you said,
The goal for us was we wanted to have a good buzz to play, but we did not want to be so drunk that we would cost us the game. And we would see that come into play later with a lot of these teams were just hammered. And, we had our faculties about us.
You got to have a happy medium. You can't be too sober like I might have been in the beginning, because then you're actually taking it too seriously and you're tight. Yeah. And then you can't be too slosh, because you'll be bouncing balls off the wall and falling and knocking stuff over. And then you're a train wreck. You have to have a happy medium of just being a little happy. That's what it comes down to, being a little happy. And the first game, admittedly, I was a little tight because I was so focused and I was so amped that I was shorting my throws, and I actually knocked a cup over.
Oh, that was awful. I couldn't believe it when you did that.
Yeah,
you were up, and then you did that, and that kind of closed the gap a little bit.
Yeah, so I was a mess,
somehow I hit that Jordan 96, 97 level of a consciousness that I've never been in.
Yes, yeah.
And I hit 8 out of 10, which is amazing for me, because I'm usually pretty not that great. I don't want to say bad, but I'm average.
Yeah.
So we won that game. We got you a shot. We got you a little loaded up, and you were ready to go from there. You heated up. Then we won the second game. We were 2-0 going into a matchup against one of my very good friends, one of your very good friends, and his teammate. And they are both very good players. And we were up 2-1. We hit the last cup. So we thought we had it won, and she went on to hit both cups to send it to overtime, and they defeated us in overtime. So they won that one. We were 2-1.
Yeah.
Then we played the party hosts in our final game. We beat them. So we went 3-1, and we earned a bye. So we were very happy about that.
Yes.
We then beat the – was our first game of the tournament against the three-time champs again? I think it was, right?
No, we beat – yes. Yes, it was.
We beat them again.
Three-time champs again, yep.
So that was a huge win for them – for us, rather, over them. Then we defeated – was there another team before the scheduling guy? I couldn't remember. Was it three games or two?
We didn't play the scheduling guy. The scheduling guy lost. The semifinals were the scheduling against our
Jeff.
Friend
yeah,
and
our
his
friend
and it, we played the SOS guys again, the hosts.
That's right.
The DJ and the
that's
other,
right.
And,
so we defeated
Justin
them.
Timberlake there.
Yeah, we defeated them to earn a spot in the finals, and of course our buddy Jeff and his teammate earned a spot in the finals as well. So now we're facing off against the one team that had beaten us in the championship round.
Yep.
Unfortunately for him, and maybe a little tactical work by us, she was pretty hammered and pretty useless. But
yeah,
our buddy Jeff, who was also in the tank big time, also went unconscious and hit nine shots on his own. So we were tied 1-1. And we hearkened back to our practice earlier in the day when I said, Scott, I don't have a bad little sidearm throw. I can do this. And the benefit of the sidearm throw is that people think you're going to bounce, so they get antsy and they try and swat the ball, so
yeah,
they'll knock the cup over.
Just exactly. Just to clarify for people, when you're normally throwing, you can't swat the ball. You have to let the ball hit something, whether it's a cup or the table. You can't just swat it. If the ball bounces, if you bounce the ball into a cup, it's two cups. So you want to swat a bounce ball.
Yes.
I just want to preface that. So go ahead and continue.
So when you throw a sidearm, it looks like you're trying to bounce because you threw it quick. You know, you're not doing your regular set shot. So I did that, and Jeff was so drunk, he swatted the ball, and that was an automatic cup. So we won. It was kind of on a technicality, but you know what? We'll take the win. So we won that. We were the Bear Pong Tournament champions. Coming out, the new guys, the Mega Powers. We won the cash prize. We got our name on some kind of trophy, I think. So we were pretty pumped up. We were pretty excited. So it was a good weekend, and then it was capped off with a very good pay-per-view and a very excellent news about Bin Laden. So
yeah, so it was a fun weekend. A lot of action. A lot of action. So that's why we had to go to a headlines pay-per-view. We wanted to share the love with all of you.
Yes.
And so
all right,
we can
so
talk
now,
about Ken Patera's hairless legs.
And before we get onto that, what I wanted to do this time was mix things up a little bit. We have a bunch of feedback here.
Okay.
I do want to direct everyone to our Facebook page. When you get a chance, though, we had some good conversations going on about the pay-per-view last night as it was going. We were having a lot of discussion on there, which was cool to see. So I'm not going to read all those because this is like kind of one-line things, comments and jokes as it was happening. But I went ahead and kind of culled the actual comments. I posted that we're doing a headline show, and some people came with some questions, but they're kind of all over the grid. So I wanted to kind of hit them now, and then we'll talk about them. So actually, there's none specifically about the pay-per-view. They kind of come as they go. So let's talk about the pay-per-view first, and then we'll kind of hit the questions as they come. So the pay-per-view we're talking about, of course, is Extreme Rules 2011. And I think we were both pretty optimistic about this show. The card looked good.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And honestly, the April shows lately, like we said, have always been very good because they're kind of all the same matches that have been well-built for WrestleMania. But the difference is they get more time and they can breathe a little bit, and you don't have, you know, the overwhelming atmosphere behind them. So we were pretty optimistic heading in, and I think those optimism was met very well. I think the show was actually very good. Now, I obviously did not really see the main event. I will admit to that right now. I don't know how much of it you saw, but like I said, as soon as we had seen the news, we switched over to CNN and RTV, and we were kind of glancing up at the big one. And I know what happened, but I can't say I really have an opinion on the match.
It's funny. We switched over to Fox at some point during the main event, and then we went back to the match, and there was only like a minute left.
Yeah.
We go back to the match. We had it paused, and we went back to it, and then we unpaused it, and Cena hit the super FU,
mm-hmm.
And won the match. So really, the pay-per-view only had like 5 minutes left anyway. So it was funny, but top to bottom, I actually got there a little late, so I missed like the first probably 6 or 7 minutes of the Orton Punk opener. So I only caught maybe the last 7 or 8 minutes of it. I don't know how long that match was, but
20 minutes.
I probably caught the last 13 of it.
And that's what I was saying, where I like this pay-per-view because it's an extension of these Mania feuds, but they get more time to tell their stories.
Exactly. I was surprised that this was, I'm surprised that this was the opener. I was thinking either the women's match or the Sheamus Kofi match would be first. So I was kind of surprised that this was the opener. I was torn on the result because I have nothing against Orton. I like Orton a lot, and I'm happy he won. But you can clearly tell the WWF doesn't know how to, they don't know how to do anything right. Mm-hmm. Matt and I were talking today, Matt Rotella, and we're like, you know, oh, they didn't have Punk win because he's leaving. I said, yeah, he's leaving because he's pissed off. He's being treated like crap. If they want him to stay so bad, then treat him a little better. You know, it's a double-edged sword here. You know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Mm-hmm. So I was a little disappointed that Punk didn't win that match.
I thought he should,
more than Orton did.
And I agree, because I actually ended up, you know, I picked Orton on our podcast last week, but then when we did our picks on the board, I ended up changing my mind because I thought maybe they'd try and swerve us and have Punk win because, you know, word was leaking out that he may be leaving, and then it seems like they try to do that. But I think the only reason maybe they didn't is because they're really looking for Orton to, you know, be along with Christian, the top, you know, top-level faces of SmackDown. So maybe they figure they can't, you know, Punk, maybe they figure they can build him back up easier than having Orton lose and then going to be the top guy on SmackDown. So,
but exactly.
The match itself was very good. Actually, I like the Mania match better because I thought it told a tighter story, but this was very well done as well. I can't really complain about it.
Yeah. Well, historically, and you and I have talked about this in past, not just here on the Place to Be podcast, but in our travails throughout our wrestling lives, as long as we've known each other, last man standing matches are just a bitch to book anyway, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of, you know, stalling and futzing around and it's just difficult. They're really, I can't remember the last good, probably still, and correct me if I'm wrong, there may be one I'm missing, but I still think the best last man standing match that I've ever seen is a Triple H and Jericho from Fully Loaded 2000. I've always liked the way that match was booked.
Yeah,
There've been some others that have been good, not great.
Well, Triple H Orton now. I think I've only seen that one once from No Mercy 07 when Triple H, when they traded the title like three different times or whatever.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yep.
And that one was supposedly, I think I've seen it one time, but from what I remember, reviews of that match were very good.
Yeah.
Triple H is not the match where
is that the match where Orton broke his collarbone?
No. That's the match where Cena had to forfeit the title that night because he was hurt from SummerSlam or whatever.
Oh, that's right. Okay. He didn't break his collarbone until 08. That's right. Okay.
Oh, these years all blend.
I know. Yeah, no kidding. That's why we're doing NWA shows now. So, because people, when I walked in, and of course, as you know, the people I sit with and you know them, they're terrible judges of of what the show is. So I sat there and said, oh, what's going on? Oh, this match is long and boring. So I immediately realized, oh, this match must be awesome because they don't really know one thing from the other.
Yeah, there's definitely a stretch. I mean, I think the stretch that I watched pay-per-views there is probably awful because, you know, the product was kind of starting to slip anyway, and I watched a lot of them there from, like, the end of 04 to early 05, and it's definitely a rough atmosphere to watch in. You know, the good people, but as far as, like, being wrestling fans, it's very, very cynical. It's like sitting in the most snarky wrestling message board possible.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's guys that, you know, admittedly, I think became major fans during the Attitude Era. They like that style more than just a straight kind of wrestling match.
Exactly. And they've learned to trust my judgment on a lot of things now. So and our good friend, actually, it's weird because John was not there. It's weird for him. It's often that he'll go to their house and not me for one reason or another, whether I'm working or I'm actually with you at Picasso's. But it's weird that I'm there and he's not. So it was a very strange atmosphere. Really, it was me and a few other people. And it was a strange atmosphere in that aspect. So it is hard to gauge, although I do a lot better job when I'm focusing. And when they said, oh, this match is long and boring, and I realized what match it was, I'm like, well, that's because they don't understand how a last man standing works. They like that Attitude Era thing of a lot of noise and a lot of, you know, they like noise. They're like noise and ancillary things like Attitude Era matches were. And this one was booked a little differently. Again, it's just tough to book a last man standing match without some type of lag. You just can't. It's unavoidable.
Right.
But I liked it. I liked the way it was booked. Mania was a little better. And I actually just watched that Friday, so I actually watched the two matches technically back-to-back, so I got a good chance to understand the two matches. I just don't like the fact Punk lost. I mean, if they want to keep him and they don't want him to leave, that was a dumb thing to do. So
I'm hoping they build him back up now. And we'll get to maybe a possible feud for him as we go through the show here.
Right.
But let's move on. Next match was a tables, basically added, it was rumored for a while, but it was added that night, and that's a tables match for the U.S. title, Sheamus and Kofi. This thing was obvious from the start that this is just a reason to get Sheamus, the title off of Sheamus, since he was going to SmackDown. A sad end, because I really liked his U.S. title run. I think it ended prematurely just so they could move him, which I'm not really a fan of. Right. I think it would have been easier to take the IC title off Wade Barrett, or just move Wade Barrett to Raw.
Yeah, I agree.
As opposed to taking the title off of Sheamus. But, so Kofi wins in 9 minutes. Yeah, you know, the finish was decent enough. He jumps off, puts Sheamus to the table with a super boom drop. But the rest of the match was kind of there. The crowd is actually not really into it, it seemed like.
I will say this, though. We did, all of us in the room, actually were very impressed. That was probably one of the best camera shots of a finish that we've seen in a while. I mean, for once, somebody was in the right place at the right time, and that very deep, high angle of Kofi coming off the top and hitting Sheamus on the table was excellent. It was very well shot. It made it even added even more impact to it than it was, and I was very impressed with the way the ending looked. But yeah, I'm kind of bummed. I mean, Sheamus maybe he's taken to the next level. He can be he's going to be a top level heel. You need a top level heel on SmackDown anyway now, and he'll be there, you know, kind of countering Rock and Christian.
Right.
So in that aspect, I'm not too upset. I agree with you that I hate guys getting screwed because they're just part of another plan.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not. I think in the long run it'll be okay. So.
All right. So moving on, the next match was the Country Whipping match. And that was Lawler and JR against Cole and Swagger. You know, I thought it was better than the Mania match that ended up going on way too long. This was a little bit tighter, a lot more action. Surprisingly enough, though, Cole and Swagger got the win. Cole rolls up JR as he was beating on Swagger. You know, Vince McMahon's a big fan of the Michael Cole storyline. That's just what it is. And I think with only 3 weeks till the next show, they probably figured it was easier to just keep that feud going than end it and try and start something else. So it's already rumored that King and Cole are fighting again at Over the Limit in 3 weeks. So I'm guessing that will finally be the blow off of that feud. I don't know where it's going or what they're doing with it. And I don't know what JR's role is going to be. But yeah, I think the best part of the match is Cole coming out with bubble wrap. So they couldn't win.
I know.
That was pretty funny. So
I think what's funny is that Michael Cole really is embracing the character. Sometimes people think too much, and I have Raw on mute right now, so I'm not. Although I haven't seen Cole yet tonight, so
yeah. He was on at the very beginning.
Was he okay? JR's actually on right now.
Yeah.
I'm ready for it to end. Not because I dislike Cole, but sometimes just things need a shelf life. And something that has started way back in, God, technically this Cole character is almost hitting a year. Because he started, was it like, right? It was like late spring when the first couple seasons of NXT.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
he really started to become kind of a...
Yeah,
actually,
the
was
all the Daniel Bryan
Daniel
stuff.
Bryan,
yeah.
Exactly. So it's literally a year that he's been acting this way. And is it a great character? Absolutely. And I'm not discounting that. But everything has a shelf life. Except, obviously, the Raw GM. But, I think last night would have been nice to end it. Now, common sense wise, you do have a good twist on that, Justin, because with only 3 weeks till Over the Limit, you might as well just let it roll a little bit longer. And I think Cole and Lawler are going to have their own one-on-one match, and something big will happen, and Lawler will just pile drive him and just beat him to goo, and I think that'll be it.
And I think you have to do it here because the crowd seemed a little less into it last night as opposed to WrestleMania. I think they're starting to lose interest in this feud. So
yeah, and I think Cole is starting to get the what we started calling during the Attitude Era X-Pac heat, mm-hmm. which is not, oh no, he's a heel. It's, oh Christ, we got to deal with this again. You know, like I think it's starting to run. Now, Cole is not being funny anymore. Now he's being irritating, and it's beyond the kayfabe irritating. It's now the actual, do I have to listen to shit again?
Yeah,
and you there's no, you can only do that so far. So they were probably smart. They probably thought it was okay to go a little bit longer, but by Over the Limit, it'll become Over the Limit yeah. if it goes any further. So
I agree.
I think, and the match itself was fine, but yeah, the crowd seemed a little like, oh Jesus, can we move on? You know.
All right. So next up was Mysterio, Cody Rhodes, False Count Anywhere, kind of the capper on their feud, which has been very, very, very good.
Yeah, and I like this match. I like this.
Yeah, they brawled. They went to the back, a little homage to Dusty Rhodes, went into like the bathroom area and all that stuff. And, you know, they went all out like I figured that they were going to try to do, knowing that this is their blow-off match. In the end, Rhodes charged Mysterio, but Rey broke out the classic Great Muta Green Mist to the face.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool. So, and then he hits the 619 to finish this up. Now, the mist is technically were usually looked at as a heel maneuver now, and Ray actually has been a little heelish leading up through this feud the way he's been booked. Do you think a heel turn is going to come at some point before he calls it a career?
I think it would be great. I think people would like to see it. But again, once it all comes down to the bottom line, and that is Ray is a guy kind of in that Cena mode where he's very popular with the little kids, and that's all the company gives a crap about at this point. So the answer is no, I don't see him turning heel. I think they're too scared to. Because I think they don't want to lose the they needed to replace him with Sin Cara on SmackDown, because SmackDown has a very strong Hispanic audience. So speak of the devil, here comes Ray now. You know, I think that just like Cena, he's a guy that's a little nervous about them turning him heel, because I think they don't want to lose the audience. I think that's so. My answer is no. I don't think he's going to turn heel. Would it be great? Sure. I love seeing guys that have been heels. I mean, God, he was a heel with a filthy animal. No.
They were like tweeners. Animals? They were okay. Heels and face. I don't know. You know how. WCW was even more perplexing than the Attitude Era.
Yeah, exactly. So would I like to see him? The two questions are, would I like to see him as a heel? Sure, why not? I think it'd be nice to see him try and act like a douche. Will it happen? No, because as you can see, he's giving you know, masks to fans, and they dig that shit. So
right now, so maybe it was just kind of a one-time thing to play off. You know, he had the mask on and he spewed it in his eyes. So, but like you said, very good match. Those guys had great chemistry, and this feud has definitely helped elevate Rhodes. So hopefully they keep that going.
Yeah. There was one moment, though. There was one moment I was thinking would have been great if when they were back near that bar area, when Ray ended up doing something to Cody off the bar, I thought like Cody would throw him into the bar bottles or something. It would be kind of cool if something really crazy happened. If this was 1999 or 2000, that bar would have been destroyed.
Yes.
But they didn't do that. But I like the match a lot. And Cody's just great. Mm-hmm. I give that guy a lot of credit, because there's a guy who no one wanted to give anything to. It was all about DiBiase. It was all about DiBiase. And you know what? People forget the guy's got Rhodes blood, man. You know,
yeah.
You know, he's one of my thugs. So, you know,
take a look at my thug Cody.
Yeah. So, people knew eventually that Rhodes gene would, and he doesn't have the bump in the gut. So, you know, he actually looks better. So,
well, you know, it's funny because a lot of people think SmackDown, getting drafted to SmackDown, is kind of a demotion. I look at it as a good thing for some of these mid card guys that can go over there and be given room to breathe. And you know, Michael Hayes is the right over there, and I think he's good with that kind of stuff and just letting guys go out there. He's old school. He just lets guys go out there and kind of do their thing. Right. And I thought that was really beneficial to him, and I think it's going to be very good for Sheamus as well to help him continue to develop. So, but moving on, the next match was the Loser Leaves WWE match, Michelle and Layla. Pretty good match for a diva match, actually.
Right.
Layla gets the win. They have the emotional, they're both crying in the ring. You know, Michelle's just kind of sitting there shocked, and then we get the debut of Karma. She comes down, beats the shit out of Michelle, hits her with the implant buster. Now, do you think she should have done more to really put over what a beast she is, or do you think that one move was big enough?
I think the move was fine. I think it was all about that first moment. It's all about the visual.
Mm-hmm.
And she was awesome.
Yeah.
She was absolutely awesome.
I like that how they show the rest of the divas backstage, kind of like, what the fuck?
Crap in their pants, and they're all in their cute little mini skirts. Yeah. I think she's going to be amazing. If she... You know, again, do I have any faith in it? Who the hell knows at this point?
Well, she came out again tonight as Raw's going on right now. Yeah. She did. She came out and beat up Maryse, so.
But here's the interesting thing. She's beaten up two heels so far. So now the question is, you know, what's going on? Is she just giving the faces a hard time? You know, Kelly looked like she was going to cry. She's good at looking like she's going to cry.
I think she's going to be an equal opportunist destroyer.
Probably. But she's two for two, and they've both been heels. And she's devastating. And I love her theme. I love the music with the cackling. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, I said this to Matt today, it's almost like just her mannerisms, and I'm giving my man Billy D some credit here. She's almost like a female Bill DeMott, only nastier. Oh, Hugh Morris, only nastier.
Mm-hmm.
She got the giggle, and she got that neat look on her face. It was tremendous. And it was a good way to get Michelle gone. She's done. Yes. And she'll go back to Houston, and she'll make little takers, and little American badasses, and move on.
And actually, while we're here, this is where I wanted to hit up our first piece of feedback for our buddy Kieran. He said,
Hot Scott.
Yes. He asked, may I suggest a discussion over whether or not Karma should win the Divas title by the next pay-per-view? Karen, since the next pay-per-view is only 3 weeks away, I would say no. I think she should continue this reign of terror a little bit longer. And then just kind of win the title almost as an afterthought, because I don't think she should be focused on the title. I think she should be just focused on destroying everybody. So kind of like one of those deals where she just happens to beat the champion because she's beating everybody. Well, but I think they're obviously setting up an eventual Karma Beth Phoenix feud. That seems to be the way to go.
Yeah, which means I don't know if they're just going to – here's your interesting situation now. Do you turn Karma heel now, do you obviously turn her babyface to beat Brie Bella or one of the, but her fucking Bella has the belt and just beat her senseless?
No, I think she's going to stay. I think she'll just pretty much be a monster that just destroys everybody and then facing off with Beth kind of, I don't know. They might actually let the fans kind of dictate this one, to be honest with you.
I think they will too. I think it'll all depend on, I think right now, here's another case. The kayfabe kids are like, oh, mommy, she's scary. And people like you and I are like, this is freaking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
She's a great character. And she's good in the ring. We haven't seen that yet. But for someone her size, she's very good in the ring if you watch any of her TNA stuff. I was ecstatic last night, and I was ecstatic tonight seeing it. If they book it right, which, again, I'll bite my tongue because who knows at this point, you know, she could, it could be wonders. And, yeah, I agree with you. This is a case where I think the fans – should dictate, you know, if we're, and this is a case where some, where fans like us, we're sitting here pissing and moaning. Maybe we need to step up now. And for all of you that go to live events, step up. Okay. If you don't want the little kiddies dictating the storylines, mm-hmm. be louder,
mm-hmm.
you know, buy stuff. You know what I mean? And we have to, too. You and I probably are due for a good live show at some point down the line. We haven't been to one in a while. You know, that's what it's going to come down to. The fans will dictate her. And if all of the diehards like us want to see her be where she is now, kind of like a female Sid,
mm-hmm.
we need to motivate the writers to keep her that way. So,
and now speaking of, fan favorites, that brings us to our next match, which is an excellent, excellent match. And that is
yes.
Christian versus Alberto Del Rio for the vacant world heavyweight title in a ladder match. Excellent match. These guys just went all out. Tremendous timing, good teases. There wasn't those long, drawn-out ladder spots. I thought they did them very well.
Yeah.
One of the highlights had to be Brodus Clay looking like he got he looked like Bin Laden, like he got capped in the head.
I know, yeah.
He got cut open big time in the back of his head. And when they showed that one shot of him out cold, there's actually a screen cap of it on the blog. Him face down, and there's this like puddle of blood right next to him. That was pretty
yes.
gross. So that was pretty nasty. But Edge comes out like we had thought. He's got a Jeep. He drives out a Jeep, honks the horn. Del Rio gets distracted just long enough for Christian to tip the ladder over, wins his first heavyweight title with WWE. Edge comes out. They celebrate, which was pretty cool. So that was a great moment. There was a lot of happy fans on our board, on the Facebook page as well. They were all kind of gushing over it. So, you know, obviously a guy who deserves it, deserves to win a match like that, deserves to be the spotlight. So we were both very happy for him.
Yeah, we were all as well. I texted Matt because Matt has actually been one of the, as much as he likes a lot of crap, he is a legitimately big Christian fan. So when I told him, he was on cloud nine, and honestly, it should have ended the show. I think for once the fans should have gotten what they wanted, and this should have ended with Edge and Christian in the ring together. It's a great moment, particularly being a fan for as long as we have. What these two have gone through, they were clearly, if you had to do a poll just in the decade of the 2000s, who the best tag team in the last 10 years is, you saw it at the end of that match.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any doubt. And to see them celebrate, and Edge looked genuinely happy.
Yes. Yep.
Genuinely happy. My best friend can finally, you know, Vince finally said, all right, fuck it. He deserves it. Give it to him. And I'm very, very happy that because to me, Christian, he might have to hop on my top five bandwagon right now, because to me, he's an
yes.
extension of Edge. And I'm going to look forward to him on SmackDown. And, you know, Christian does have a cachet of guys to work with. I'm looking forward to it. And it was just a great moment. And Brodus Clay, who looked like JFK with his like just gushing in the back
yeah,
of his head.
Ugly.
I apologize. I mean, I don't want anyone to be offended by that, but it's just that vision of just blood just falling out the back of his head. It was crazy. And I didn't know where the blood was coming from at first, because I saw the front of his head and he had a little cut, but I saw that puddle. I'm like, where the hell did that come from? And then they show the back of his head and it's just all like red. It was crazy. But give him credit. He took it like a man. Mm-hmm. And there were some big spots. But, yeah, I agree with you on the pace. I was pleasantly surprised as well. I'm glad you caught on that as well. It wasn't that typical lying around and just broken stuff. And, all right, now I'm going to go up the ladder very slowly. I'm so tired of that spot now. And I'm glad they've kind of weaned off it with ladder matches.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good match for him and Del Rio, because Del Rio wasn't totally comfortable. When he was in the ladder match at TLC, he was a little uncomfortable. He seemed a lot more into the environment, and I think that's what made the match better. I was a little concerned about him, but he seems to be ready. I'm looking forward to him on Raw. He's actually sitting with the announcers right now during this tag match. But for Christian, it's just a crowning moment, you know.
And hopefully he gets a good reign. I hope it's a little while before. You know, it actually might be pretty good if they have let him see if he can develop into that top level face, and then maybe you kind of do a big face versus face match with Orton at SummerSlam or something like that. Have them kind of be friends and build that competitiveness between the two of them or something along those lines. I hope they let him have a good run though; he deserves it. So
I agree. I hope he doesn't lose before, you know, October. That's a nice run, and then he'll hopefully stay in the top.
Yes,
no, that's what I'm hoping. I hope this isn't like Chris Benoit 2004, where this is the pity title, and then once he loses it, then he's back to, you know.
Well, the good thing about him being on SmackDown is he'll be able to kind of hold that main event down. But I mean, Orton's really the only bigger name than him, unless Taker comes back, which doesn't seem like it's happening anytime soon.
Exactly.
Orton's the only, you know, bigger guy than him,
right?
You know, star wise over there. So I think he's set up for a good run, and I think his first feud is going to be with Mark Henry, probably. But
I agree.
Okay, so moving on, let's quickly go by this one. Another throwaway match they added in at the last minute, and that's Big Show and Kane defending against Wade Barrett and Ezekiel Jackson in a jobber lumberjack match where they had every NXT and other clown around the ring.
I know. I didn't recognize half the guys. I was like, what
so, the biggest shocker was D.H. Smith out there in a cowboy hat. I don't know what's going on. I guess he's doing like a Canadian cowboy gimmick or something. So
but they're probably doing the gimmick they wanted to give Brett.
Yes.
1983, and then they decided to change it. So I probably want to do it at some point. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, Big Show and Kane retained there. More crap between the core going on. So.
Right.
But let's quickly move to the main event. Of course, like I said, I don't really have too much to say about this. I'm going to have to try and catch it again and watch it. I was right regarding the interference. I had a feeling R-Truth would come in and get involved and beat down Morrison. But I did think Miz would be the winner. I actually was not expecting Cena to win the title back. But now that he has, if you're going to do it, you might as well have him hold it all the way till Mania and dangle it in front of The Rock until then. You might as well. I mean, let him have an epic run with it and set up a title match with The Rock at Mania.
Yeah, why not? I mean, I feel bad for Miz, but, you know, Miz did hold the belt for, what, 5 months?
He had a good run. And even tonight, he fought Cena in a title match, and they thought he won, and they reversed the decision, but he actually kicked out of the AA. So, I mean, they're definitely protecting him and booking him well as a star, regardless of being champion or not.
Yeah, and I think they are probably going to lean towards Rock and Miz at SummerSlam. That because there's really no one else you can give. I don't know who else you can give Rock to, or you can give the Miz to at SummerSlam. I mean, we'll talk more about it as we get into the summertime. There's going to be a lot of crap could change by then. So I think it's surprising Cena won. I think the crowd was flat. That's why I thought that I didn't think that should be last, but it's Cena. You know, why do we keep doubting it? So I think that I agree with you. I mean, why not? What the hell is he going to do? I mean, you might as well roll with it. I mean, he's got nothing else going on. You know, make it epic. Make this I mean, then you can finally say, and this is one case where I will finally be happy with them doing something with Cena if they just make the title really mean something. And the crowd would love to have Rock in a title match. I mean, that would make it just as good. And if you're going to have that be the main event, you might as well put the title in it as well.
Yes.
I don't have a problem with it at all. I don't think it's going to happen because I just think their attention spans are getting Russo-esque. So I don't know if that'll happen, but we'll see. I'd be pleasantly surprised. But we'll see how the next 2 or 3 months dictate that, because there is a lot of guys on Raw right now. I mean, they really jacked Raw up. It'll be very hard to keep the belt on Cena because the fans, I don't think, will understand what they're doing. Because, you know, I hate to say this, I really do.
Well, I mean, if he talks about it, though, I think they may.
Yeah, if he keeps telling Rock, you know, if he uses this is where we could start using the countdown and the clock and the logo and all that kind of jazz.
Right.
Yes! Sorry, I just got excited. The Bruins just won in overtime.
No, they won like 2 minutes ago. You're way behind.
Well, I only have it on my laptop because I can't change the my two DirecTVs are being
used. I didn't want to. I was going to save it for you and surprise you during the NHL recap.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Well, anyway, yeah, if they do that, okay, now you're starting to really try to put faith in the front office. And maybe by the end of the year and Triple H is calling the shots, maybe he will do that. Because that's something that's up his alley. Long title reigns. He's big into making the titles mean something. It'd be perfect. So if they are going to do that, it's time to use the clock. And it's time for Cena. And maybe this is where he can be a little heelish and not have to alienate anybody. Because I would appreciate Cena being a douche to me as an old school Attitude Era fan who likes Rock over Cena. If he's going to be a douche to me as a fan over the next 9 months or whatever, fine. I'm ready for that. That I can deal with.
And now while we're on that topic, before we actually had some feedback here, I wanted to read about Extreme Rules, but I actually wanted to talk quickly about the using of The Rock. WrestleMania apparently drew a huge buy rate. They reported in their quarterly earnings report. They're going to get the million buys they wanted. So, you know, there was a lot of back and forth about whether having Rock not wrestle, having him just be the guest host, was it a smart move? You know, you have him here, why didn't you just have him and Cena now? You know what? They cashed in. They got their million buys. They made a shitload of money. And guess what? They're probably going to do it again next year when they have Rock versus Cena in Miami. So I actually think it ended up being a pretty shrewd move for them to use him twice to build to this first show, you know, cash in now, which they obviously did. And now I think they'll cash in again next year when they really start building for that one-on-one match and they can rehash over the last year everything that's happened. You know, you're going to see a confrontation coming up tonight. Right now it's about 10:45, so we're waiting for that to go down on Raw. So I think it was very smart of them to do it the way they did it.
Yeah, I still, obviously, you know, hindsight 2020, is that the way? Yeah. The show itself still was not as good as it could have been, but once you buy it, once you buy it, you buy it. You can't, like, grade the buy rates. You know, it was a million buy rates, but we all know that nobody really liked the show. You can't gauge buy rates. It's just a buy rate's a buy rate. You buy the show, you hate it, but you bought it.
So yeah, I guess I'm not really talking from a quality standpoint. I guess what I'm trying to say convey is from a business standpoint. It was a very smart business move for them.
No, it was. And they knew that they were going to get a big money because Rock and Steve, you know, both of them in the same show for the first time since, you know, WrestleMania 19 in essence. Well, no, 20, I guess they were both there. But, you know, it was the first time in a long while that they were both in a high-profile role, Rock in particular. And I think that hooked everyone in. And that goes back to the question that you and I talked about a couple podcasts ago. Was the sizzle worth abandoning the steak? And we talked about maybe somebody – I think it was somebody on our Facebook page who had said, do you think they were so concerned about making sure that everything was glitzy and pretty and sweet that they kind of let the card kind of lag and, you know, whatever. The matches are there. They'll end up liking them anyway if it's painted in this pretty package. And at that point, I think – the fans were like, well, you know what? It's a package. We'll see it. Rock's in it. And so that's why the buy rates happened. And I'm happy. I'm glad. I don't want them failing. I'm glad the buy rate was good. But, you know, they can't kind of lean on that for the rest of the year and let the rest of this product, you know, flounder. So keep up the good work. You know, if they think it's good, fine. I think it's struggling at the moment. And we'll see what happens. I thought Extreme Rules was a step in the right direction. But, you know, I'm happy that the buy rate did well. And I'm not surprised it did well.
Right.
You knew that it was going to be a hot number, so.
Oh, yeah, we didn't know if they'd hit the million, but they did.
They did.
So they must be, I'm sure, very ecstatic about that. So let me just read these other few pieces of feedback regarding Extreme Rules, and then we'll move on to our sports recaps. Our buddy Chris James on here, he's on our Facebook page. On our board is Disabled Smileys. He asks our thoughts on a Kofi, Mark Henry, R-Truth, Booker faction. He said, you have a legend, a main eventer, a mid-carder, and a brute strength guy. Booker T's commentary last night makes me think it's possible. Now, he was picking up on a little bit of Booker T. I couldn't, as always at the bar, I can't really hear a lot of the commentary that well. I guess Booker's actually gotten skewered on multiple sites that I've read, so I don't know if he had a rough night last night or what, but I guess during maybe the Kofi match or during our Truth segment, something along those lines, Booker was pumping him up or pushing him in a certain way that made Chris think that maybe they were hinting at it. I don't know if they're hinting at it, and I don't see our Truth switching and Kofi turning heel, but maybe Booker along the lines becomes either a trainer or a manager or something if they want to take him off commentary. But I think right now they're pretty dedicated to leaving him on the commentary booth.
Yeah, I think so too. Would that be a cool faction? It's a faction, man. Of course it'll be cool. Hello. we are the Master of Heel faction. Oh, God. They're even going to be a Mae Young sighting on this show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they already said she's going to be on, so I'm guessing there she is.
Yeah. Oh, God. There was a good little moment a few moments ago. I don't know if you caught the screen a few seconds ago, but Rock was actually talking to Christian.
Mm-hmm.
It was very cool. I think that...
Well, there is one thing I can tell Chris, and we are not calling this team the Silverbacks because that got our buddy Matt Rotella in some trouble.
I won't get into that now. Let me answer this first question, and then I'll talk about the Silverback comment.
Okay.
Number one. I love. Come on, you and I are the masters of. We are complete marks for heel factions.
Yes.
That would be a good one. I think that would be cool. I would like to see an R-Truth Kofi team of like these two looking Peter Tosh-esque Jamaican, not Jamaicans, but like, you know, kind of rough and tumble,
mm-hmm.
Urban team. I think that'd be very cool. But then again, it's a tag team, and nobody gives a crap about tag teams anymore. But the other question is, I guess, Matt, for those that don't know, Matt Rotella got called out by one of our kind of more loyal
Todd, right?
Fans, Todd Weber, yeah, who was offended that Rock just kissed Mae Young in the face. Okay.
Well, I don't think he was offended as much as he was just saying it might not have been the best thing to say. I don't think he took offense to it.
No, but the point is he – Mark Henry's nickname used to be the Silverback. So, I mean, yeah. It is what it is.
Yeah, I see it both ways. I think part of it, you know, I think Matt needs to have a little awareness of what he was saying. I see Todd's point that maybe it wasn't the best idea to go on a public forum and claim that a, you know, African-American wrestler should be called Silverback, whether he was or not in the past. But I don't think Matt meant anything racist by it. I don't think so. I don't think he's aware enough, especially at 11 o'clock at night, the way he normally sounds on these things. I don't think he meant anything by it. So we'll leave that as is. But I just wanted to kind of let Todd know I did talk to Matt about it and we kind of cleared things up. So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Very quickly. I think your, storyline may actually start to bear some fruit here because Cena actually just walked into Rock's party and he's kind of holding the belt over his face. So
I'm telling you, they got to start having taunting with it and build it now. Let him hold it all the way. Look, I'm not the biggest face Cena fan right now, but if they're going to end Miz's reign, make the title strong and build up to that mega WrestleMania main event. You might as well just do it if they're going to, you know, if they've already come this far.
Exactly. So I'm sorry, go ahead. I just wanted to point that out to you. Go ahead.
All right. So our next piece of Extreme Rules feedback comes from Jeremy Nichols, another loyal listener.
Mm-hmm.
He said, how much heat does Cole really need? Seriously, he was at an all-time high for heat going into Mania, which was the perfect time for the blow-off of this feud, but he still kept this heat. Now we're a month removed, and he keeps it again. What's the point? Where the hell are they going with this? And as we talked about earlier, Jeremy, obviously they're heading towards another match that seems like it over the limit. Which we're hoping is the end of the feud. I'm a big Cole fan in this role. I think it's entertaining. But even I'm getting to the point where I'm kind of done with it. So I do like seeing JR on TV. I don't know if he's going to stick around after or not. So I will be sad if he does leave. But at some point, this little four-man feud they got going on does have to come to an end. The question is, where do they go from there? Does Cole stay in the booth and keep sniping with Lawler? Does he, you know, go to SmackDown as a manager? Does he just kind of forget it? Does he go off to, you know, get a concussion from a pile driver and go off TV and come back 3 months later as his old self, you know, who knows where they go with it. But
that would be very funny if that was the case.
Yeah, if they really wanted to end the whole thing, they could just do that. So we'll see. There's a lot of ways they could go, but any comments you have on that, Scott, before we move on?
Well, we talked about this earlier that we do think that it's reached the end of the line. The other problem is you can't keep sacrificing a slot in a pay-per-view with a retired Hall of Famer and two guys who've never wrestled. I mean, after a while, you're going to start devaluing the quality of the pay-per-view if you're going to continuously have a guy who just can't wrestle be on the show every month. It's just going to take away from the overall quality of the pay-per-views. So yeah, it does need to end eventually. But that's actually pretty good. It would be funny to see Cole come back, you know, asking for like, it would be funny if he went back like old school asking for like Todd Pettengill and get himself back to like 1997 and not know what's going on and looking for Heidenreich. And yeah, that would be very funny. But yeah, no, I agree with you, Jeremy. I think it's time to walk away from this. There's no clearly.
Okay. So our last piece of Extreme Rules feedback comes from a lengthy post from our buddy, Rob Houston. He actually has 3 points. Two of the other ones are basketball and football related. So we'll get to those in a little bit. But he said, what was the point of giving Cena the title last night? I get he's the poster boy for WWE, but it almost seems like at times they're making the same mistake WCW did in the end by not giving new talent a chance to grow and develop. Miz has done a great job with his character and should have been able to keep it a while longer. I just don't see the point. Where do you see this latest Cena title run going? And Rob, I guess we kind of already talked about that earlier in the show. I see it going all the way to Mania. I agree with you that they need to make new stars, and they obviously are trying to do it and trying to make guys look stronger after the whole Edge thing. It's like they kind of panicked and were like, shit, we don't have anyone. And I think that's why all of a sudden they are making Sheamus kind of strong again. They are making Cody Rhodes look strong now. And there are, you know, a couple other guys that are trying to build up to be strong guys. But it's going to take a while. They're not going to be able to just kind of push these guys right to the top. And they can't keep doing this back and forth bullshit booking either. So they got to start making guys get convincing wins and get convincing pushes. And I think right now Christian and Cena are kind of going to be the holdover champions until they can get that going.
Yeah. The thing is right now it kind of goes with, and I don't know if we'll talk about it tonight, cause I'm not sure if you watched Tough Enough tonight, but
I have not. I'll watch it in the morning.
Oh, okay. Then we'll talk more about it. We'll talk more about it later in the week. But, you know, the thing is guys need to start being, you know, you need to start, growing characters without the necessity of belts. You know, you got to start just, you know, you got to create feuds. And look at Alberto Del Rio. He became a star. He got title shots just from facing Rey for six months or whatever. You know, the fact that Miz doesn't have the belt anymore shouldn't have to bother anybody. You know, the belt helped establish him as a great superstar. Now he can go on with it. He doesn't need to have the belt to do that. So, Rob, I wouldn't get too upset about it. Like we said earlier, he looked pretty good tonight. He's kind of protected. They do like Miz, so I wouldn't be worried that Miz is going to get buried now. That's not going to happen. But Cena kind of has a plan now, and it is a huge. This is a big deal. I mean, this is a big deal to look ahead to April of 2012, and they can't botch this. So if the title is involved in something with Rock and Cena, they've got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else will be fine. So we hope. So I wouldn't get too upset, Rob. I know in the basic scope of things, nobody wants to see Cena be champion again.
Right.
But Justin and I are trying to be optimistic that they're going in the right direction with it.
So, hopefully. So, yeah, Rob, thanks for that feedback. We're going to get to your other pieces of feedback in a moment. So that kind of wraps up the wrestling part of this. You know, we got the pay-per-view, kind of gave our thoughts on that. So I'm sure we'll be doing – excuse me one sec, Scott, talk for a minute.
So right now, CM Punk and Mason Ryan. Right,
I don't know why I pretended like I wasn't going to.
Yeah, I don't know why
you'd be audible on air. But
yeah,
like,
I know. Anyway, Mason Ryan and Punk are actually facing Kane and Big Show for the tag titles right now.
Oh, so may they win? May they? Or
is this just a singles match? Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's just a singles. It's Mason Ryan against Kane. Sorry, well, I thought it was a tag match.
Maybe they're setting something up then for a tag title run.
God, he looks. I mean, I'm sorry. He looks literally. From top to bottom, he looks exactly like Batista.
I was just getting that Batista, like, 2003 vibe with Punk and the flair roll.
Yes, I know. And he faced Kane.
Yep.
He did face Kane, right?
He's on that career path.
So,
all right, so let's wrap up the wrestling talk for this week. I'm sure we'll be back in a few weeks with our over-the-limit picks as well. So we'll talk about that then. But let's quickly move on to the NHL playoff update. Your Boston Bruins and my Boston Bruins defeated the Flyers tonight in overtime 3-2, so they take a 2-0 lead in that series, and hopefully they can put them away this year, because last year we know they blew a 3-0 lead to Philly. So
yes, they did. Very upset about that, but looks like David, let me see who scored the goal to win it.
I know Thomas had like 53 saves or something crazy like that. He played out of his mind.
Yeah, let me see who got the...
As you do that, let's recap the rest. Tampa Bay has actually jumped up on Washington 2-0. You know, Washington, as always, struggling in the playoffs. They won the first round series, but it looks like Tampa may have the number here. Over in the Western Conference, the number one seed Vancouver survived the scare from Chicago, and they are tied with Nashville 1-1. And San Jose leads Detroit 2-0. So maybe this is the year the Sharks finally break through. They're a team similar to Washington. They choke a lot in the playoffs, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, I think people are just getting fed up with Ovechkin and all of this. You know, once again, you're just not getting the job done. And look, Tampa Bay's got a lot of talent. Stamkos and Le Cavalier and Matassa-Louis. But, you know, Washington needs to finally do something. I mean, enough's enough now.
And I'm actually kind of sad about it because, like I said, when I was there a few weeks ago, they really seem to be swept up in Capitals fever. So
Yeah, they have been. I think they have been the last few years. And I think everybody loves their little Ovechkin t-shirts and jerseys. But the guy's got to win something now. I mean, Crosby's got a cup. So guess what? He's got the lead in the future generation superstar face of the NHL. All right. Crosby's team got eliminated this year because he was hurt. But, you know, he's got to step up. It was actually Krejci. Krejci won it in overtime. David Krejci with Nathan Horton. And Chris Kelly scored his fourth goal of the series. And actually, the Bruins were down 2-0 early. James Van Riemsdyk scored his sixth and seventh goals of this postseason. So the Bruins trailed 2-0 after almost 10 minutes of play. And then Kelly and Marchand tied it after the first period. Then there was no scoring again until Krejci scored in overtime. So big win for the Bruins. But if they fall, if they go ahead 3-0 this time and then blow it, then I don't know what to do. Yeah. But this time they don't have the home ice to bail them out. So they just stole the home ice from the Bruins, from the Flyers. Just put the damn thing away.
I mean, the goaltending is clearly better. That's the strength here. So I think they're in good shape. I think they will put them away. I think they will win the series. Going forward, I'm not sure. I don't know what's a better matchup for them, Washington or Tampa. I'm not going to profess to be a huge hockey guy. So
I've watched them twice this year against the Caps, and they can play with the Caps. Tampa concerns me. The Bruins scare me when they play a team that's got considerably more firepower.
Mm-hmm.
The Bruins seem to be able to handle Washington. They forecheck well. They kind of clog Ovechkin down. I actually would rather see them play the Caps, believe it or not. I don't think I want to play Tampa. They got
comes off a sweep and they're fired up here.
Yeah, they got a lot of firepower. And teams with a lot of firepower scare me against the Bruins because the Bruins just don't have that kind of firepower. That's not the kind of game they play. So Tampa Bay kind of plays almost a Western Conference style of hockey. So I'm a little concerned about that. But I'd like to, again, I'm just happy the Bruins are winning. They played much differently. And I watched it. You and I actually, when we were practicing, we were doing our pre-production, our pre-prep for our tournament Saturday. We were actually watching the Bruins game. And they play totally different than they did against the Canadiens. They're playing more aggressively. They kept the puck in the Flyer zone. They're moving it around. They're using their size, which they didn't do against the Canadiens. They let the Canadiens skate around and they tried to outskate them, which was dumb. They finally are using their size a bit, and the Flyers just can't handle it. And their goaltending is just abysmal. Bernie Parent is I always try and steal my brother's line at least once per podcast. Bernie Parent is not walking through the door. So the Flyers are just stuck with who they have. And I just, you know, Daniel Briere can score as many goals as he wants, but if they're just keep letting pucks in the hole, biscuit in the basket, if you will, they're not going to win. So the Bruins seem to be playing with a lot of confidence right now. Let's just hope it continues. And
let's quickly shift over to the NBA then.
Well, let's talk about the West real quick. In the West, did you mention the West?
I read the ball as you were going.
I want to talk about the Predators, but it coincides with the NBA. So we'll go through those first, and then I got something to say about the state of Tennessee, but go ahead. We'll go to NBA now.
All right. Tonight we had the first game in Atlanta-Chicago, and Atlanta actually went into Chicago, beat them by 8. So a big win there for the Hawks. Maybe they get some mojo going. I don't know. I thought they'd be a little lifeless. I thought they beat the Magic because I thought the Magic are soft pussies.
You were you had no faith in the Hawks in the series. You really didn't.
Oh, you're gonna give me some credit. At least I had them here.
Well, no. I'm not saying that you were. I'm not saying you had no right to think that way. But who knows.
I still think the Bulls are too strong. The only problem with the Bulls is they seem to kind of take the pedal off the metal a little bit when it comes to some of these, some of these teams where they think they should just go in there and curb stomp them. It seems like they get cut off guard a couple times. Happening against the Pacers twice, and looks like it maybe could happen here a little bit. But hopefully that was just kind of a blip in their road. Another shocking win, and I think this is what you're going to be talking about in a moment, and that's Memphis beat Oklahoma City, and they beat them down pretty good in Game 1.
Yeah,
that is a young team playing with a lot of confidence right now, wiping out the Spurs. Andrew Risch's boy toys. They went in there and smacked them around. So, and now they went into Oklahoma City and beat them as well. Now, you know, this is where Kevin Durant's going to make his money and make his name. He wants to be a top echelon star. He's going to lead a team like this where he has a talented cast around him over a young upstart team like Memphis. This is where he has to really come through and carry his team.
Exactly. Just a little quick recap. Derrick Rose had 24. Deng had 21. But Rose re-hurt that ankle tonight.
That's not good.
So we got to be very careful. Joe Johnson, a big game tonight. 34 points for the Hawks. He was 12 of 18, 5 for 5 from 3-point range. So they obviously couldn't guard him tonight.
And there are rumors or sources saying that Rose will win the MVP award.
Yes, I saw that as well. It's amazing talking about and the Lakers just started their game 1 of their series. We'll talk about that in a minute because that's our little battle because that's your
Yes. Your, and we'll get your, to the other series in a minute, too, because that's one of Rob's other comments. So we'll get there.
The state of Tennessee, historically, obviously a college state. You know, there are three pro teams in Tennessee, but everybody loves the Vols. That's, or if you're a Memphis fan. But mostly it's Vol country. But think about it. The Tennessee football program is in a shambles. The men's basketball program is in a shambles. The women's basketball program hasn't won something in, you know, 4 years, and definitely not at the level that UConn is now, or even Baylor in the women's basketball realm. But look at these two teams, afterthoughts in the state of Tennessee. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Nashville Predators are both whipping up the Tennesseans into a frenzy. I'm serious. I would not be surprised if Nashville wins two in a row at home over Vancouver. I would not be surprised. While we were waiting for our winnings on Saturday night, I was actually watching first overtime. And let me tell you, Nashville can skate with the Canucks. Canucks are probably the fastest team in the league, and they hung around with them. But Memphis, we talk about clutch guys and guys that kind of have been, I don't want to say sleepwalking through their careers, but has anybody found a better place to succeed than Zach Randolph?
No.
I mean, he's been to one crap place after another. He did not fit in Portland. That's when they were called the Portland Jailblazers. I knew he was not going to be a good Knick.
No.
The Big Apple is a bad place for him. Mm-hmm. He needs to be in a quiet, serene atmosphere where he can't get into trouble. And he will not do that in Memphis.
Well, part of it, too, is guys just mature. You know, he's always had the talent, and now he's just finally matured into, you know, and they look to him as a leader, really, as of that team. And he is a leader, and he's just a beast underneath. He's got the build and the ability. And now that he pieced together the confidence and the maturity, you know, he become a superstar. And look at Marc Gasol, another guy that a lot of people thought was a throwaway in the Pau Gasol trade. He's become a star. So that team's really putting it together. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know if they have enough to get by the Thunder or even get to the finals. But you know what? It wouldn't shock me if they did. I'll put it that way.
Well, I was listening. I was bouncing when I was driving back from my second home in Cranston on Sunday. I was flipping back and forth between a Yankee game because the Mets were the night game. So I was flipping between your Yankees and that game on ESPN New York. And the Thunder just sounded very sloppy. Mm-hmm. They were kicking the ball around, a lot of turnovers. Russell Westbrook had a little hot streak going. Durant didn't play that great. And I think that Memphis right now feels good about themselves. I'd be too. I mean, how would you feel? A team that no one gave any chance to beat the snot, in essence, out of San Antonio in six games. I mean, those were it didn't feel like a six-game series. Or, no, it was five-game series, right?
No, it was six. But that
it was six.
No, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was six. But that was one where, kind of like we said about the Dallas series, where maybe they should have won probably in five. That, you know, the Spurs had that kind of that one epic win that kept them alive.
Right. So that series is one to keep an eye on because Oklahoma City's got their backs against the wall. They've got to win game two tomorrow night. At home, they can't go into Memphis down because the FedEx Forum will go buzzing.
Yeah, those fans, good for them, man. They were fired up for that game.
Yeah, no, they were, and I think they'll be fired up when Game Three happens on Thursday. Obviously, the other series to talk about, your Celtics losing Game One in Miami, 99-90. You knew the Celtics weren't going to sweep. But I still feel good about the Celtics. I think they're still going to win Game 2, and I think they're going to win two in a row at home. And I guarantee you, I'm going to put it right here in the Place Beat podcast, and I know Mr. Reich will be listening, and when he comes back on again, we're going to talk about this. Maybe it'll happen before or after this happens. I guarantee you, either Game 3 or Game 4, LeBron is going to get another chance to hit a big shot, and he's going to miss. I'm telling you, it's going to happen at least one, either Game 3 or Game 4 at the Garden. Celtics are going to have a one-point lead or two-point lead with, like, 14, 15 seconds left, and he's going to need to do it, and he's not going to. That's just how I feel.
The good thing for the Celtics is that they played pretty much the worst game possible. Rondo was in foul trouble, and Pierce got ejected, and they still were in it at the end, you know, with about 3 or 4 minutes to go. So that's a positive they can take. I picked the Heat before the series, before the playoffs even started. I'm going to stay with them just because I think the young legs are going to be a little too much. And if they can get – they're not going to get the performance they get from James Jones again. But if they can rotate that performance around and get a similar performance, and if Chris Bosch ever lives up to the freaking hype and money they gave him, which I didn't think he'd ever be able to do anyway, but if he can give them anything, I still think their young legs are just going to be too much for the Celtics to handle, to be honest. And the only positive that I didn't see coming with me that the Celtics would handle the Knicks as easily as I did, so they weren't as tired coming out of round one and they had some time to rest. Right. So that makes me a little wary of my pick, but I'm going to stick with the Heat. But let's read Rob Houston's points here about the Celtics. He said, yesterday Celtics got hosed by terrible calls. Now, I'm not saying they would have won due to them shooting 36% from the field, but it appears from time to time that the NBA officials, more than any other group, feel it's necessary to inject themselves into a game and put the focus on them instead of the players. Let the players play and determine the game's outcomes. What are your feelings on officiating and overall performance of NBA officials and thoughts on the game itself? I didn't see the whole game. I was doing some stuff over my parents' house, and I was actually listening to the Yankee game. But I did kind of read the recaps and hear a lot of the sports radio talk about it today. You know, feeling that Pierce didn't deserve that second technical, and also some of the other calls. One of the ones on Rondo, I guess, as well, was a little questionable. But as far as officiating as a whole, I think we've touched on this in the past, but obviously NBA, we agree, have the worst officials. It is the toughest game to handle, but it's also the game that can be affected the most by officiating without being blatantly obvious. Baseball, if an ump has a bad strike zone or makes an out or safe call, it's blatantly obvious. NFL, all those calls are blatantly obvious one way or the other. NBA, you know, fouls and travels and that stuff can be a little touch and go. So NBA officials, I think, can affect a game slightly by just calling a foul here, calling a foul there, especially if they know their shit. And if you, you know, read a lot of the Donaghy stuff that he was talking about, how you know, under the radar, they really can be. Call an early foul on a star. Do, you know, whatever. You know, call fouls here and there. Do this, do that. Don't call fouls. And how they can affect the game that way and swing it by one point or two. So I definitely think there's something to it. I don't know. I don't see an obvious fix. David Stern doesn't seem to give a shit because he's got other things to worry about, unfortunately. So, Rob, yeah, I agree with you. I think the officiating is horrible. I don't know if it's like a league-mandated thing like some people buy into. I don't think that has anything to do with it. Like, I don't think they're trying to push stars through. I just think the officials have certain biases and certain are affected by certain home arenas. I think that plays into it.
Mm. You know, it's funny you say that because you're absolutely right. In baseball, everything is fairly cut and dry. Balls that are foul, balls that are fair. In a bang-bang plays at first – yeah, if you could blow a call at first base, but an inning is so long. Mm-hmm. Pitcher gets out of it, double play. Who's going to care?
Right.
NFL, you could pass interference calls are pretty blatant. They're pretty obvious. Holding calls are pretty obvious. You could tell if a referee botches something. But when you're looking in the post or you're looking in the paint, you got 6-7 guys banging the crap out of each other. It's a judgment call. You know, referee can call what he wants, and you know, a lot of people thought that our two teams in the 80s got gift calls, Larry and Magic. And obviously there was always the Michael Jordan rules throughout the 90s. He got pretty much every call handed to him. It's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. And the NBA's never changed from that, never swayed from that. And, you know, there's flavors of the month. Kobe used to get calls. Tim Duncan always wished he got calls, never did. LeBron gets a crap load of calls now. So it's just the way it is. And I'm not saying it's fair. I'm not saying they're cheating. But, you know, there is a little fraternity going on, and some, you know, journeyman hump is not going to get the credit of a call over a Paul Pierce or a Dwayne Wade. It's just the way it is. It's just the way that the hierarchy is it fair? No, it's not. But that's just the way it is. And it hasn't only happened in the last 5 years. It's been going on in the NBA for the last 30 years. When you get to the postseason, it's kind of hard because everybody's a superstar. So it's just, you know, it's just the way it is. And I know Andrew and I like to, you know, debate Donahue, you know, handing the Lakers that game 6 at the Forum at Staples in 2002.
Well, that's legit. No.
Yeah, but, you know, hindsight's 2020, I guess. But
was hindsight. Current sight was 2020. Well, you know what? As it was happening.
Yeah, well, you know, the Kings had a game 7 at home and they still blew it, so it didn't really matter. The Kings still had it in their own. But yeah, my point is, the NBA refereeing has always been shady, regardless of who's the recipient of it. It's always been shady. And that's just the way that, you know, unfortunately, that's never going to change. It's just the way it is. And this could go beyond, you know, does the NBA need a new commissioner? Maybe. You know, does there needs to be a change in the way that that officiating is handled. I don't know. But it is frustrating because when it doesn't go your way, you know, you bitch. When it does go your way, and we just talked about it, it did go my team's way in 2002, and you just, you know, smirk and move on. It's just, you know, you don't get the calls one minute, you get the calls the other minute. NBA officiating is tough, but and sometimes not fair, but in the long run, it's never going to change. So I hate to be a cynic about it, but that's just the way it is.
True that. So let's quickly hit, before we wrap up, we got two more things I want to get through. The yep. first one is the NFL draft. Any quick thoughts on that? We talked about this quickly on our last show. I wasn't really completely ready for our for any kind of draft preview with the lockout going on and so much other stuff going on. I didn't feel like it was legitimate for some reason. I wasn't buying into it. And then, you know, there's news that the lockout was lifted. And then, as you said, you know, you warned us to kind of be ready for the appeal, and the appeal came through and they held it up. So right now, the lockout's back on, unfortunately. So, you know, who knows where the NFL season stands. And Rob actually had one more piece of feedback on that. He said, who do you think will be the first time to try and sign a first team to try to sign a free agent when the lockout's over for now? And if you don't think any team will, what will the free agents out there do? Will it increase or decrease market value for some of the veteran players, or will there be a rush to sign rookie players to smaller long-term deals, in a sense, putting in their own wage scale in place?
Wow, that's pretty detailed.
Rob
I don't
definitely
know.
Brings some good questions. We'll say that
he does. Rob's a good guy. Well, he's a smart guy, and he's, you know, he's a marathon runner, so he's got cred. I'm a little saddened by the fact that it was held up and the lockout's back on. I didn't pay attention to much of the draft this weekend because I frankly don't care. Even though my team needs help, and I did like the picking of Tyrone Smith with the ninth pick. The Cowboys definitely needed help in the offensive line. I haven't looked at any of their other picks, to be honest with you. And the reason is because I have teams that are actually still playing, and I got really pissed off. This is just a side note.
I want to try and shit on your parade really quick. You said you like that pick. This is the first sentence, and this is the what he brings category for the ninth pick. The biggest concerns with Smith are instincts and weight. So there's a good first sentence.
I did read that. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
he misses assignments on occasion, and it's to show he can maintain the 20-pound weight gain he has had since the end of regular season. So. That's a good start.
I normally
that's a good
hate...
first sentence. Weight and schemes. That's good.
Well, you know what? I've never liked drafting USC guys anyway. But who the hell is that? Is that his wife?
Oh, no, he's not married anymore.
That's right. I forgot. Or ex-wife.
No, who's that's
what's
her name?
Maya from Marmalade. Okay. I couldn't recognize her first. Anyway, well, that's what happens when you draft USC guys. But anyway, I don't even care because, you know, I have teams right now that are in the postseason, and what pissed me off so bad, and maybe you agree with me on this or disagree, it's up because you listen to EEI more than I do. I was just ready to listen to Bruins talk and Celtics talk as I was driving up to your house on Saturday, and I wanted to get pumped up for the Bruins game one. I put on EEI, and these two clowns are hosting some smorgasbord at Gillette bitching about Ryan Mallett. Who gives a shit? Cares right now? You got the Celtics and the Bruins in the playoff. This isn't like down here in the New York area where the Knicks and Rangers suck, so all they need to talk about is either the Yankees or the Giants and Jets draft picks. And yes, 1050 ESPN did have a Jets party at the Meadowlands, but that's different because the New York teams are not in the playoffs right now. I put on EEI. I want to hear talk about the Celtics.
I told you to listen to the Sports Hub. Anyone out there in this area, Sports Hub is far superior to EEI.
Well, I keep forgetting what the frequency is. I got it. Next time I'm on the road to your house, you got to text it to me because I don't remember the frequency. But I'm like, I don't care about – and New Englanders right now shouldn't care about Ryan Mallett as the backup for Tom Brady. But they may not even play. You have the Celtics and the Bruins in big-time series right now, and you're talking about the Patriots quarterback draft picks? Come on. God. The sports may not even be played in the fall. You know, this might be the last time the Celtics win anything or any because the NBA may have the same problem in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
So I was furious, but yeah, I didn't really watch it. I know that Cam Newton went to Carolina. I'm 50-50 on that. You know, you and I talked about it on Saturday. I guess Jimmy Clausen's going to start. I don't know if you draft a number one pick and then sit him.
Well, I mean, you know, I think it's a fine way to go. I think they should. Not that he's going to learn a ton from Clausen, but you know, why have him? Why throw him to the Wolves? A guy that needs to really learn schemes and learn how to play a pro game. I wouldn't just throw him out there.
Mm. Well, I mean, and I think the Panthers just needed to get excited about something. You know, they want to see Cam Newton jerseys get bought. Now, I don't know what number he'll be because Jimmy Clausen wears 2 right now. So unless Jimmy Clausen just gives him his number, I don't know. But we'll see. But I didn't really pay attention to the draft much. I didn't see any of the other Cowboy picks.
Well, I know Detroit did pretty well because they already had Nakama. I'm not going to get his name.
Damakansu.
Right. And now they're adding Nick Fairley to that line. So that's a pretty beast defensive line they're going to have there.
Yeah, I agree.
Denver, I know, is getting good grades. They got Von Miller with the second pick and then did well later on. Cincinnati, getting very high grades, got A.J. Green as a receiver, which they needed. And then they ended up drafting the quarterback. I'm blanking on his name. The redhead guy, Andy Dalton.
Oh, Andy Dalton. I like Andy Dalton, actually. I like Andy Dalton.
Of course, he was a big part of the controversy because John Gruden was saying how no redheaded quarterbacks succeed and all this other stuff. So that was kind of the joke. Going around there for a while.
That's funny. But Andy Dalton is a born leader, and I watched plenty of, you know, my client covered a lot of TCU football games over the last 3 years, and he is a leader. And right now that's what the Bengals need because Carson Palmer just ended up being a big pussy in the end. So I think it's a good pick for the Bengals, and I think he'll be a good NFL quarterback. I think he just needs to get a little bigger. But I think he'll be a good NFL quarterback. That's a good pick for them. And I like Von Miller going to Denver.
Yes.
As well. I think that was a good pick, too. I got to look at the rest of the Cowboy picks.
Well, one of the more ballsier moves was Atlanta trading a ton of draft picks to move up. And they went ahead and took Julio Jones from Alabama, the receiver. So that was a big gamble. They need defense, you know. They needed a receiver, but they also need defense. So that was kind of a risky move. We'll see if it pays off.
Yeah. Well, their defense got lit up like a Christmas tree against the Packers in the playoffs. So
yes.
You know, Rodgers threw for like 380 against him or something. So, yeah, I was a little puzzled by that, too. And a lot of people think the kid Green from Georgia, I don't know where he went, may end up having a better pro career than Julio Jones. So I don't know what's going to happen. Should be interesting to see.
Tennessee grabbed Jake Locker 8th. Good pick for them. They need a quarterback with Vince Young being gone. So he'll be a good fit there. Maybe we'll see that Tennessee resurgence continue that we're talking about. Mm. Jacksonville also took a quarterback, Blaine Gabbert, so that might be the end of David Garrard, or maybe he'll back him up for a year, like we were talking about with Cam Newton. Right. The Jets got Muhammad Wilkerson, who is getting a lot of raves, especially from Mel Kiper. Powerful player at point of attack and stack and hold the edge, as well as any 5-tech deke in this class, and it seems like Rex Ryan is pretty excited about him. They also took another running back, a quarterback, so they did their usual work. And you know, Rex Ryan's been very good at drafting the last couple of years. I can't say anything about it. So I like the way I like the future of this team for the first time in a long, long time as a Jets fan. I can say I finally really like the direction of where they're headed over the last 3 years. I think they finally have a good leadership team in place. Say what you want about Rex Ryan and his style, but the guy wins. He's a winner. So I like where they're headed. But, you know, we'll save a lot of this. I'm sure we'll do an NFL offseason recap like we did for baseball. So we'll kind of wrap up there with the draft and move on quickly to baseball. Are there any thoughts that stick out in your mind that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I was happy the Jets looked pretty good. Giants seemed like they did pretty well with some picks as well. I'm really puzzled about this this Julio Jones thing with the Falcons. I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, that offense, that defense looked awful mm-hmm. against the Packers in the playoffs. So I find it puzzling that they got traded all those picks just to get another receiver. You know, I know Roddy White needed some help, but you could have gotten a pretty decent receiver further down the line than having to pick somebody as big as as Julio Jones. But I got to sit and look more at the rest of the Cowboy picks. I didn't see much of them. I hope they got some help in the secondary. They needed corners and safeties. So I'll be curious to see what, you know, how it lays out as a whole. But again, it's kind of hard to get into it when the draft was very unusual this year because you couldn't trade players. You can only trade picks. So you really had to know what you were doing. Mm-hmm. You really needed to know what you were gonna get and keep. So it was an unusual draft. That was another reason. It's a very unusual draft because everybody was fairly hamstrung. Based on the rules. So We'll see what happens at all. I have a feeling we're going to see a chunk of training camp taken out.
Probably.
I think they should just ditch the preseason games and just start the season.
That's dangerous, though. You risk some injury there. Maybe they'll do one or two preseason games.
All right, well, half of them. Maybe that came out wrong. At least half the preseason games. And try to start on time, you know.
All right. Well, let's wrap up quickly with some baseball talk. Any stories popping out? I do want to mention two quick things about the Yankees. First one is Phil Hughes came back okay, so he does not. They ruled out that circulatory issue.
Oh, okay.
That a lot of people were fearing he had. Now that does leave the question: what the fuck is wrong with him? So they need to now do that. But at least they ruled out the circulatory issue. Also, if the Navy SEALs are done with Osama bin Laden's.
of all the people that would botch that, I wouldn't think it'd be you. That's pretty funny.
You know, I've seen it a lot the last 2 days. So
yeah.
You know, if they're done raiding Osama bin Laden's mansion, I wish they would raid Jeter's next and maybe bring him to justice because he is. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about Derek Jeter. The guy. The only reason he's even hitting what he's hitting is because he has like 10 infield singles and half of them are like nubbers up the third base line. I mean, he looks cooked. I'm sorry. He looks cooked. There's no way he should be leading off. I cringe whenever he comes up with guys on running scoring position. I just hope he doesn't hit a double play. I just want him to strike out, if anything, if there's only one out. Tonight, I think twice he came up with guys on second or third and couldn't come through. So his defense actually hasn't been the problem this year. It's his hitting, and I don't know what they're going to do with him. But I think they're running out of time. And they're winning right now, so they can kind of mask it. But I think eventually they're going to have to move him down in the order because I think their best order does not have him leading off. But right now, they do lead the East by 3 games at 17-9. Best record in baseball, most wins anyway, goes to the Cleveland Indians, surprisingly enough, 19-8.
Yeah, good for them. Good for Manny Acta, and the pitching seems to be doing pretty well. I will say something. This is kind of related back to our top story, but last night at the Philly Met game at Citizens Bank Park, the crowd started chanting USA, USA, and Howie Rose and this was in an important time of the game. The Mets ended up winning mm-hmm. the game in 14 innings, but they were in the top of the ninth, and there was a rally, and he stopped and just let him and Wayne Hagen, who I'm not a big fan of, they didn't talk for a minute, and they let the crowd. They just let the crowd chant, and then they explained why. And it was a pretty cool moment.
Yes.
The Mets, they're good when they're beating lesser known teams. You know, they won 6 in a row against the Nats and Diamondbacks, and then they went to Philly and they got promptly their ass kicked, 2 out of 3. I wouldn't say their ass kicked. I mean, it was a close game on Saturday. Actually, they could have won that game if, you know, one bad pitch to Mayberry, they could have beat Roy Halladay. So, and then they came back and won on Sunday. This is a big 6-game homestand. They got 3 at home with the Giants, the defending world champions. Another fiscally troubled team. The Dodgers come in next weekend, this coming weekend. You know, the Mets aren't playing badly. You know, injuries are hurting them. They seem to have one thing I have to say about the team, they seem to be having a positive attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think they would. I thought they'd be a train wreck, but they're not. Whether guys are traded, not traded, I won't get into that. But you know, I will say that the Mets do seem like they have a positive attitude right now. And, you know, maybe they can just keep going along and feeling good about themselves. Speaking of the Yankees, big win tonight, ninth inning comeback mm-hmm. over the Tigers. They beat I don't know if they beat Verlander, but I know Verlander pitched tonight.
They were up on him, and then the Tigers came back and tied it, and then the Yankees won.
Yeah.
Scored 2 in the ninth. Going back to Central quickly, if you look at that division, you know, it's still relatively early, but the White Sox in Minnesota, I mean, they're 10 games back, and that's a lot even at this point. And this is coming from someone who went through this a few years ago with the Yankees and Red Sox being, you know, 9, 10, 11 games out in April and May. It's a lot of work for these teams to come back. Now, you know, they have a couple of easier teams ahead of them in Detroit and Kansas City. Detroit really cannot hit. They've lost 7 in a row. Kansas City, you know they're not going to hang in there. I think Cleveland's a little bit more legitimate, but you wonder if they're kind of like the Padres last year where they're going to run out of gas eventually. So, you know, those teams have a chance to come back, but they got to get shit in gear soon because, you know, Minnesota sitting at 9-18, 10 games out on May 2nd is not a good thing.
No, I had said, and again, I'm kind of, we had said that Minnesota was going to struggle this year, and obviously not having Joe Mauer is been, and when he is playing, he's not healthy, and he's struggling. I would like to see Kansas City hang around. Will they? Probably not. But Cleveland does seem like a team that could at least hang around for four or five, you know, four months or so. Maybe
they have pretty good pitching and they have solid hitting, you know, and 13-2 at home, plus 47 run differential, which is pretty insane.
Yeah, it's more than the Yankees.
Yeah, more than all of baseball, right? Pretty much. I mean,
let's see, 47.
The next is the Cardinals at a plus 36. So
yeah,
you know, or the Yankees at plus 39 rather. So they, yeah, I mean, they're getting it done. If you look down at the West too, that's a tightly bunched. Look at even Seattle is only three out there. So, 7-3 in their last 10, they took 2 out of 3 in Fenway. So they're hanging around. I still think that'll be a three team race, with Angels, Texas and Oakland.
I tell you though, if Felix continues to pitch as good as he is, and then they've got this young kid,
Pineda,
who's, you know, his ERA is just over 2. He's got 4 wins. He's got more wins than Felix. You know, his whip is barely
get
won.
Wins.
What's that? Yeah,
let's not get into wins.
You know, his whip is barely won. I mean, he keeps pitching like that. You know, maybe the Mariners can hang around and survive with very little offense. You know, maybe they'll pull off a trade in the deadline if they're hanging around. You know,
right, actually, I lied. I am going to get into wins very briefly. It's because this really pissed me off. ESPN, Rob Dibble, see you do the Monday night game? It was him, right? Him booing.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. So he, he's going on and on about Verlander, how, you know, they're saying, oh, he's off to 1-3 or whatever his record is. And they're like, but if you look at it, he only gave up 3 runs in those 3 losses. And, you know, his team only scored 1 in all 3 games. And, you know, and now he's 1-3, but it's like right there. Piece it together, dumbass. Obviously, wins and losses don't mean much because they don't independent of the pitcher. It's like he's right on the precipice, and they still focus on the number of wins and number of losses. Like it's some really important stat when really it just isn't. It just not is no longer an important stat for pitchers. It's an important stat over the length of a career of a pitcher because it tells you if they were consistently good or consistently bad. But when you look season to season, this is why you can't punish guys like Felix Hernandez who only won 12 or 13 games and win in the Cy Young because it's not really on him, you know, and he basically said the reasoning, and they just don't want to admit that, you know, it's an antiquated way of looking at pitching.
Right, exactly. And I picked Verlander to win the Cy Young Award, and you know, maybe there's a good chance he still will, but obviously the Tigers problem right now has nothing to do with Verlander's run support. It's the run support. They're not hitting, and they got a crazy lineup and they're not hitting. You know, they could be winning this division going away, but they're not. So, and they have a chance to. I mean, I think they have a chance to make a comeback in that division, but they got to hit. It's not just a Verlander's problem. It's the fact that they're not hitting. And with a lineup like that, you know, you're looking up at 2 teams that conceivably you should be blowing out. I mean, Detroit should be very disappointed right now that they're not in a better position. You know, the 2 teams that they were supposed to battle with, the White Sox just aren't doing anything right, and Minnesota's just so banged up. You know, Detroit should at least pass Kansas City at some point and then try and chip away at Cleveland. But they got a hit. I mean, and trades is not going to work. I mean, they got a good enough lineup. They just got to snap out of it. As for the West with Seattle, like I said, I mean, I don't think they're going to hang around. But you never know. I mean, if this Pineda really sticks around and really stays consistent with him and Felix combined, maybe they don't need to score a lot of runs. But it's kind of like the Phillies. But
I just don't think they have enough behind those 2 guys anyway. And I don't think they have enough offense nearly enough to get by those 3 teams. Mm-hmm. The Phillies are different because they have, you know, dominant pitching and a decent enough offense.
Right. And but right now though, they're stuck in a dogfight with the Marlins. They're both 18-9. And you know, and
Atlanta,
the Mets actually,
my Braves are coming on though. 4.5 out, the 7-3 in the last 10. So
they're
starting to piece it together now.
Yeah, they are playing better. And the Mets, you know, 12-16. They don't suck, but you know, it's just a consistency thing. But you know, maybe we'll see what happens this week. 6 games at home, 3 with the Giants and 3 with the Dodgers. The Central's kind of mishmash. The Cardinals are leading it, but I still have no faith in them where they're pitching.
I mean, my boy Big Puma, Lance Berkman, is carrying him right now. He's playing out of his mind. He just won his 2nd straight Player of the Week award, so he's having a huge open to the season, but I don't see St. Louis sticking around with their pitching.
No, I mean, but look how crazy the division is. I mean, the Astros are in last place, and they're only 4.5 games out, and then nobody is really running away with it.
No. And Milwaukee now, they got Markham back, Grinke back, so I think they'll start to piece things together as well. And, you know, like I said in our preview, you know, the key for them is they cannot be too far out by the time they get those guys back. And they're not. They hung around. They're only 2.5 out. So now they're in prime striking distance now that they kind of got their team back together. And the West is the Colorado show. There's nothing else really
to talk about there.
I think it's their division to lose this year, as we expected. Yep. So that kind of wraps things up from the headlines. We already hit up our feedback, so we're good there. We do want to ask you for more, though. We do enjoy reading it. We do enjoy getting into it, and going forward with the pay-per-views, if you guys want to come on the Facebook wall and chat and post your ideas, it was actually pretty cool last night going back and forth with a lot of these guys, just hitting one-liners and you know, like I said, jokes and different comments. So
yeah, no, I apologize. I really wanted to hop on as well, but again, you go into the iPhone palace. if you don't have one, then you're screwed. So yeah, totally. I was getting no signal whatsoever. But yeah, continue with it. It's a lot of fun. I wish we had a chance to talk Tough Enough tonight. Justin, obviously, you still need to watch this week's. Right now, last week's is on as Raw just ended. It was a good show this week. Mm-hmm. I actually, I won't spoil it, but one of the last three will blow you away. But I have a feeling why they did it, and hopefully after you watch it, we can chat about it, because I'm curious to see what your opinion is. But you have to watch it.
Yeah, I'll watch it first thing in the morning at work. Usually I listen to it in the morning, so that way I won't get spoiled. So, yeah, we'll wrap things up there. Then hopefully we'll be back later this week with SummerSlam 88. And then in the next few weeks, like we said, we're going to have Leanne on and our friend Josh talk about The Office, and maybe we'll get into the social media stuff as well with them. Kind of hit those two topics, and then we'll just continue rolling our vintage vault and our headlines, you know, until more stuff
comes up. And I actually kind of need my I have to admit it now. I don't like admitting it much, but I do need my Andrew Reich fix. So
we'll be having him on before the NBA finals for sure.
Yeah. So.
All right. So with that, we're going to wrap up, and we're going to play another Real American Hero song, and that's one of Scott's favorites. So we will leave you with that, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
I got my 2x4. I got the American flag.